BBC WM
95.6.
Teachers, if you don't like it, get out of it.
Pensioners who can't do anything to boost her income.
Abduction? As far as I'm aware, she actually went willingly.
Ian Lee, Saturdays
9 till 12. BBC WM
95.6.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, sitting in for Nick Conrad. He's off poorly again, so sending him all the best. Do get well soon. Lots coming up between now and midday, including, well, we've got lots and lots of stuff. Later on, we'll be talking about Elvis versus the Beatles. Who's the best? It's Remembrance Sunday tomorrow. Is it insensitive to release a video game like Call of Duty that close to Remembrance Sunday? And are video games like that just glamorising war? But the thing I want to talk about first of all is the story that's in a lot of the newspapers. This soldier in Afghanistan who has been found guilty of murdering an Afghanistan wounded soldier. He's been sentenced to life. We don't know what the term will be yet. But should we be lenient on him because of the situation he's in? 08453 009956.
Call 08453 009956.
Ian Lee on BBC WM
95.6.
It's an interesting story. I've been following it closely this week, and it's pretty horrific. We may be playing some of the audio later on. I'll warn you when that's coming up. But a British soldier has been found guilty of murdering a wounded Afghanistan prisoner. He dragged him into some bushes under some trees so he couldn't be seen by a helicopter, and shot him. Well, what do you think? Should he have been found guilty of murder? He has been. He is guilty of it. He's going to be sentenced to life. We don't know what that term means yet. We'll find out probably later in the week. But, a Royal Marines commander has appealed for leniency in the sentencing of this commando, who's been found guilty of murdering a wounded Taliban fighter in Afghanistan. The judge at a court-martial in Wiltshire yesterday told the serviceman, known only as Marine A, that he would face a mandatory life sentence, but the minimum term has yet to be set. Major General Julian Thompson, who led three commando brigades during the Falklands War, has told The Times that life imprisonment would be too harsh. Well, the court released some of the audio of the footage this week. We're going to play it now. I warn you now, it's not particularly pleasant. Bearing in mind the subject matter, just to flag up, it's not particularly pleasant. In this extract, the Marines discuss whether to provide medical assistance to the injured insurgent and then whereabouts in the body to shoot him.
I'm going to knock over again.
He's dead. Don't waste your FSDs on Teaser. Take it off him. Right, get the high camera out so you can take a picture of him, minus all the thing.
Where is the cat?
Oh, the call sign.
It's gone that way. Yeah. Went south, mate.
Yeah, shuffle off his mortal coil, you nothing you would do to us.
I know.
Exactly. Alright. Obviously this doesn't go anywhere, fellas.
Yeah, roger, mate.
I've just broken the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, roger.
Wow. It certainly has an impact. 08453 009956. Should we be lenient on this soldier? Or should we throw the book at him? You have to remember that soldiers, when they are serving abroad, whether you approve of these wars or not, when they're serving abroad, they are representing this country. But I can't remember why we're in Afghanistan. I never quite remember what we're in these places for. But I would imagine one of the arguments that's put forward is to bring democracy to a place. Well, how can we be the ambassadors for democracy if we're going around shooting people who are wounded, who pose no threat to us whatsoever? So I guess you come down on one of two sides on this. Do you have some sympathy for this soldier and feel, yeah, actually, you know, it's a tough place. We have no idea what it's like to be out in a war zone. Things are different. And yes, we should have a little sympathy for him. And while it's right, he's punished. Yeah, I agree with this other soldier. Let's give him 5 years. Or do you think, no, hang on. He is an ambassador for this country. He's let the side down. Let's throw the book at him. 08453 009956. You can text as well, 81333. Start your text WM. You can also email me. This is my own private personal email address. Shh, don't tell no one. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Albert's the first call of the morning. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning.
Albert from Edgbaston. What would you like to say on this?
Well, at the moment, I am 90 years old and I shall be 91 in February. In January 1939, when I was 15. I was living on the northeast coast. And I joined the territorials, and I told them I was 17 and a quarter, which was the age you had to be. I was accepted, and in 1939, that year, they had two training camps. You used to have to go away for one, but this year, with it being 1939, we did a fortnight in Edinburgh and a fortnight on the Welsh coast. Yeah. I was in the Royal Artillery.
Right.
Now, unlucky for me, I might say, the war broke out, as you know, in January, in September 1939. And I was working at the shipyard then, and I was only 15.
Right.
And I was called up for the war. So they were thinking I was 17, and I served through every day of the war. I never missed it.
Right. I feel I'm living this in real time. What's your opinion on the soldier that's murdered?
I'm going to get to that because I finished up serving with them.
Right.
With the 40th Marine Commando and 43rd.
Okay.
Out in Yugoslavia with Marshal Tito's crowd. That was in 1944.
Yeah.
And, by the way, I served from North Africa all the way to Germany, including Italy. And they took us from Italy. Winston Churchill at the time decided we needed a brigade out there.
Right.
To support Marshal Tito.
Albert, with the great respect, we have got other calls. If I could just push you on
it's a bit of a time, you see.
Yes.
I've got to say.
I know it is, and we're only here until 12, so I don't want to sound disrespectful. But
the partisans used to shoot the prisoners.
Ah, now we're getting somewhere. Sorry, so what happened? The partisans used to shoot the prisoners.
When we got there,
right.
We were under Brigadier Fitzroy McLean, who later became the Minister for War.
Okay.
So
who was shooting the prisoners?
The partisans.
Right.
And I have a photograph here of me with the partisans.
Right.
Anyhow, they used to invite us up to see the prisoners get shot. Well, our brigadier, Fitzroy McLean, told them he wouldn't allow it or he would withdraw the brigade back to Italy. So they stopped it. And after that, we used to ship the prisoners off from the island of Vis in the Dalmatian Islands.
Yes.
To Bari in Italy.
Okay, so the Yugoslav soldiers would shoot the prisoners. Did you ever accept their invitation to go and watch the prisoners being shot?
Once. And there was a young German lad. He broke away and ran behind a tree and they shot the tree away with him. Now then, I'd just like to say that the 40 Marine Commando and 43rd are the finest bunch of men I ever had the privilege to serve alongside. And I went on one or two raids with them along the Dalmatian coast. They were great. And I never seen them do anything like they've just suggested now.
Albert, when you saw these Yugoslav soldiers shooting the prisoners, how many did they shoot when you were there? And secondly, how did that make you feel?
There was about four or five there. But
how did that make you feel, Albert?
Well, I'll tell you how I felt. We got an Italian prisoner, and they used to have a hole in the boot at the time.
Yeah.
Not like us, with the big colours on the backs.
Yes.
And he came to us, he'd escaped. So we kept him with us, and he was very good help of the cook. Well, when we had to leave that island, we brought him with us in a truck to Bari. And I said to him, when we got there, midnight, of course, when we moved, I said to him, have you got any relatives here? He says, I have a sister in this area. I said, well, where do you live? He lived in Lampedusa. You know Lampedusa, they're talking about now.
Right, yes.
That's where he lived.
Well, listen, Albert, just
so we said, off you go and find him.
Yes.
Eh?
You let them go. Albert, very quickly, because we are running out of time. I have to go to Liz on the travel.
What I want to bring up
is
what a fine bunch of fellas, those were in the Marine Commandos.
So, in conclusion,
very well disciplined.
What do you think should happen to this soldier who has been sentenced to murder now? Should we throw the book at him or should we be lenient?
I think we should be lenient. Because when the war was on in Iraq, I noticed there was about 20 of our young lads, red caps, cornered up in a place they were going to make a police station. Now, the red caps are only there for military discipline out there. And the whole lot of them got shot dead. And the parents now are trying to bring in about it. They're complaining about it.
Albert, thank you very much indeed. We've got to end it there because, I've got to squeeze in more calls. Albert, what horrific things he's seen. Yugoslav soldiers shooting prisoners. One has to wonder why you would take up such an invitation. But 08453 009956. He thinks we should be lenient on the soldier who's murdered this Afghanistan wounded, severely wounded prisoner. Should we be lenient or should we chuck the book at him? 08453 009956. Dave and Derek will be coming to you soon. But first of all, it's 9:15. It's BBC WM. Morning, Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6, sitting in for Nick Conrad. He's poorly again. Get well soon, Nick. It's on the front page of the Times. It's in lots of the other newspapers. Clemency plea for battlefield murder. Life term too harsh, says ex-Marine commander. Let me just read a bit of this from the Times. One of Britain's most distinguished Royal Marines urged clemency for a fellow commando found guilty yesterday of killing a Taliban prisoner in Afghanistan. Major General Julian Thompson, who led British forces to victory in the Falklands, said that life imprisonment for the soldier would be too harsh. Here's a quote. Obviously it was wrong, and everyone in the Royal Marines is quite clear about that. The Royal Marines are a family. I am sad for the man who did it, in that he probably had a moment of stupidity. I feel for him as I would my own son who might do something stupid. Let me just read that line again. I am sad for the man who did it, in that he probably had a moment of stupidity. A moment of stupidity. Is that really a good enough way to describe a soldier who has who's got a prisoner? There are three soldiers. They have got one prisoner. He is injured. So one of them, Marine A, for sport, drags him under a tree so he can't be seen by the overhead helicopters, and then executes him. Well, General Thompson believes that is a moment of stupidity. What do you think? Was it? We just heard from Albert there. He has seen things that I hope I never have to see in my life. What a privileged, lucky life I lead. So is it different if you're serving? Does it do things to you? 08453 009956. Any sympathy for this soldier? Simple as. Dave's been waiting the longest. Morning, Dave in Albury.
Oh, morning.
Dave, what do you reckon? Any sympathy for this soldier?
Yeah.
Why?
I had a friend, and he was in the Gulf, and he come up against a very, very similar situation, and he says, people don't know the pressures you're under. He said, go out there and do your job and do it as best as you can. And that man's right. It's just a moment of stupidity.
But it's a moment of stupidity, Dave, that has resulted in murder. I don't think you can call a murder a moment of stupidity. His job is to go out there and defend territory and at various points, yes, to kill people. That's their job. But he has broken the rules of war. The Geneva Convention has been broken. He has committed a serious crime. It is murder.
Yeah, but and my mate used to tell me, he said he still gets flashbacks. I don't hear from him that often now,
yeah.
But he still gets flashbacks from what he did.
What kind of stories did he tell you, Dave?
He'd been over in the Gulf for 3 days, and he come up against the first person who he shot, and it was a 19-year-old soldier from the other side, and he said they were taught, if they're in the way, get rid of them. You know, they were there to defend the country, and he said it's not nice. He says, people don't know what it does to you. You know, you have these things, I've got to do it. And you really regret that for the rest of your life.
This, and you're right. I don't know if you've served, Dave. I haven't, and I have no intention of, and I never want to see anything like that, and I pray that my boys never get to see anything like that. And we can't begin to imagine what it does.
And one of the flashbacks he still gets from this day, he was up against someone else, and he put the bayonet through him. And now he gets flashbacks. He gets up in the middle of the night, runs a bath of hot water, gets in the bath and stands in the bath, and goes through the actions as if he's putting the bayonet into the kid.
Why does he do it in a bath of hot water?
Because the ground was sodden, it was all wet.
Right. Dave, listen, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for that. It's going to be an uncompromising conversation this morning that we will try to keep it on the side of decency. But when we're describing situations that have happened in war, then we might cross one or two lines. So I'm just flagging up that if you have young ears, that's as far as I'm going to let it go in terms of descriptions. Okay, that's the worst we're going to hear this morning. I'll certainly do my best anyway. But you may have young ears that you don't particularly want to hear. 08453 00 9956. Well, Dave, they're having sympathy, empathy for the soldier that has committed this murder. I do find it. They have a job to do. Their job is to kill people when it is right to kill people. This Afghan fella was wounded. He wasn't moving. There were three commandos and one of him. They could have taken him any time they wanted, and they didn't. He dragged the fella, the prisoner, under the trees so he couldn't be seen and shot him. Do you feel any sympathy for this soldier? 08453 00 9956. Say, keen to get your views, particularly this morning, if you have served. And someone I know who has served is a Conservative MP, Bob Stewart, former British UN commander in Bosnia. Good morning, Bob. Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Morning,
can
Bob.
You hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you. I appreciate your time this morning. Do you agree with Major General Julian Thompson that we should show clemency and leniency towards this soldier?
Well, certainly there are extenuating circumstances insofar as this is full-blooded combat. The law is very clear, and this is the difficulty. The law says that you may kill the enemy until the moment the enemy is under your control. And at that point, you've got to swing through 360 degrees. And from actually trying to kill him, you have a duty to protect and look after the enemy once he is under your control. That is extremely difficult to do when actually the blood is up and people are fighting for their lives and they're frightened, and especially if some of your mates have also been killed. Mm. That's the problem. So should there be leniency? Well, that's up to the judge and to the court-martial. But I'm just explaining the circumstances as to why there might be some kind of extenuating circumstances.
The thing that surprised me about the audio that we've played this morning, we may play again a bit later on, although it's rather unpleasant, is how calm Soldier A sounds. It doesn't sound like he's, caught up in the emotion and the excitement. It's very calm. It's, where's that helicopter? Let's drag him here. Right, I'm going to do this. Don't tell anyone I've done this. He sounds very much in control.
Yes, that's quite possible too. One of the ways you train people is to keep calm, keep in control. You may be frightened sick. You may be, the blood may be raging, but the armed forces train, particularly leaders, to actually keep calm and actually go the other way when they're under real pressure. For example, signalers, when there's a contact, you don't want them screaming down the radio, "We're under fire, we're under fire, we're under fire." You want them saying, "We're under fire now, we need the following things." And you deliberately train people to calm down. I don't know the circumstances, to be honest, but I'm just telling you what might have happened.
Should has this been blown out of proportion, do you think, Bob?
No, of course it hasn't. Mm. It's clear that a general court-martial found a Royal Marine guilty of having killed a person who had surrendered to him. No, it's not been blown out of proportion. All I'm explaining is keep it in proportion too, because quite frankly, these sort of things very occasionally, the vast majority of people does not happen to. But I could tell you that point of capture, that point between being someone trying to kill you and you having the responsibility to look after them, that's an extremely thin line, and that's the problem. And that is why normal human beings make mistakes. I have been in combat, and I have made mistakes, and I am not the judge. I am just telling you that I understand that things go wrong. It is not a formula. It is not A plus B equals C. Life isn't like that. This is a battle situation, and it's ghastly.
When you're saying you've made mistakes, Bob, you're not suggesting that you've shot people and killed people.
No, don't get me. Of course I have.
No, I'm just making clear.
But what I mean is, when you're in combat, you make mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay? That's what I mean. I certainly have not killed anyone like that.
Okay, just making sure. I wasn't suggesting that for a second, so please don't think I was. Is this embarrassing for the British Army, respected around the world? How damaging are things like this?
Of course it's damaging. It damages the reputation of the armed forces, actually. He was actually a Royal Marine. He's part of the Royal Navy, but the British Armed Forces' reputation will suffer. I'm just explaining why it might. I mean, the other thing which people haven't totally understood, I don't suppose, is the fact that this sort of thing happening doesn't help the chances of any of our armed forces if they're taken by the Taliban. There's not much chance anyway with these people, but this sort of incident does actually not help.
Bob, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much indeed. Conservative MP Bob Stewart, former British UN commander in Bosnia. Again, we're talking about a situation I've got no idea what it's like. Absolutely no idea what it's like. Have you got sympathy? We're getting lots of phone calls in this, by the way, so if you want to get on, I suggest you give us a call on this now. Have you got any sympathy for this soldier? 08453 009956. It's turning out that a lot of you have. A lot of you are saying, well, it is extenuating circumstances. But hang on, if this is going to be seen around the world, and as Bob there, it won't do us much good if any of our men and women are captured by the Taliban or other forces we might be fighting, because they will use this as an example of what they can do to us. So don't we need to make an example of Soldier A? Don't we need to be firm with him and send a message to the world that we take this kind of thing seriously? Derek's in Droitwich. Morning, Derek.
Good morning.
Have you got sympathy for this soldier?
Oh, I have, yes.
Why? He's murdered someone.
Does the enemy take any of our prisoners? Does it also know in history, do you know that when they landed in the Normandy landings, they were told they would take no prisoners for the first half hour? So, as far as I'm concerned, war is not, this soldier, that soldier.
Derek, the Normandy landings were an invasion, so of course they would be fighting. And also the Geneva Convention wasn't written until, I think, 1949. So the rules of war hadn't been established then.
So it was all right to kill them then?
Well,
you needed a rule, more or less. The Taliban do not take prisoners. And even in the Second World War, British soldiers, from what I've heard from the old guys, sometimes did not take prisoners. Now,
does that make it right, though? Does that make it right today?
It's war. It's war rights. You can turn around and say it's war rights. I don't believe they should be there, but that's my what's it. They're British soldiers.
But this soldier,
if you want to punish the bloke, Then just kick him out of the armour.
Have you heard the audio of what happened?
Yeah.
You've heard it. Can you just stay there, Derek? Because I'm going to play the audio again. Okay. This is what happened. Now listen to this, and afterwards you tell me if you think this is a war scenario. Have a listen.
I'm going to knock over again.
No, he's dead. Don't waste your FSDs on Jesus. Take it off him. Right. Get the high camera out so you can take a picture of him. Minus all the things.
Where is the cat? I think full time. It's gone that way. Yeah. Went south, mate.
Yeah, shuffle off his mortal coil, you. Nothing you would do to us.
I know.
Exactly. Obviously, this doesn't go anywhere, fellas.
Yeah, roger, mate.
I've just broken the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, roger.
Derek, he drags the soldier under a tree. He asks where the helicopter is so he can't be seen. He's then disrespectful to the body. And then he admits that he has broken international law. That is a murder.
And do, now, they're at war. The Taliban do not take prisoners. In was he not one of the soldiers when they were dangling British body parts in front of them before this... action. Wasn't he one of the soldiers that was doing that? I'm sure if my mate, you know, they dangled my mate in there, I'd probably stick one in him as well,
He's not allowed to. He has broken the rules. He has committed murder. Derek, there are rules. It's called the Geneva Convention. Derek, you're wrong. There are.
There's rules for us, but no rules for them.
But why are we in Afghanistan?
Don't ask me.
I can't remember either. I imagine it's to bring democracy there. That's one of the nonsense they come up with.
But, oh, we got democracy here,
But we are setting an example. We shouldn't be sinking to the cowardly standards that the Taliban have set. We should be showing the world just how good we are. And this fella has not done that. He's embarrassed at us and he's put his colleagues' lives in danger.
I've never wanted to join the army or whatever.
Me
I don't
neither.
Like people telling me what to do. But as regards that, my dad, who was in the Second World War, didn't want to join the army. He's called up. He served in Africa and Italy. And basically, it is not the way that people think. My dad never spoke about it. He only ever spoke about a volcano in Sicily erupting when they landed. He never spoke about the war. He must have seen some things. He never spoke about it. But as regards war, it is mainly the civilian population that come. Kids get killed, you know. I mean, basically, it ain't like what you think, you know, playing soldiers
Listen
with
to
toy
this.
Soldiers.
Listen
it
to this.
Just ain't like that.
There were three soldiers there. There were three soldiers there, Marine A, B and C. Marine A is the one that did the shooting. Page 7 of the Times, there's an extract from Marine C's diary. Listen to this. So there I was, pistol... By the way, this is quite graphic as well.
Yeah.
There I was, pistol drawn, waiting for A to get off the internet so I could pop this little so-and-so and be done with it.
Yeah.
A came back over. As I walked off, A popped him one himself. I felt mugged off, but job done. The little so-and-so was dead at the end of the day.
Come on,
Derek. Come on, that's the... we're better than that. We're better than that.
No. You... Basically, if I had friends and I'd seen them killed, blown up, suicide bombings and all that, you would possibly think exactly the same. You're human, basically, and some have got a shorter fuse than others.
Derek, thank you very much indeed for your call. 08453 009956. I am surprised. Am I surprised? Yes, I think I am a little bit. We've not had one caller today saying, no, I've got no sympathy. Maybe I've misjudged the mood on this. I thought there might be some. Not one caller said, actually, I've got no sympathy for this. This guy has broken the rule. And bizarre as it may seem, there are rules to war. The Geneva Convention was brought in to employ fair treatment of prisoners. And I know it seems crazy, you know, yeah, it's okay to blow up a school and things, but... none of you seem to have any sympathy. None of you seem to think we should throw the book at this soldier. 08453 009956. You can text 81333. Start your text WM. You can also send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. I spell Ian correctly, by the way, IAIN. Just so you know, there are some fraudsters out there who drop the second I. Why would you do that? It's the only thing that makes the name almost interesting. Shafiq's in Walsall. Good morning, Shafiq.
Good morning, Ian.
Have you got sympathy for this soldier?
I don't think it's a case of a sympathy or no sympathy. But I think what you read about the diary of the second soldier just a moment ago, that tells you what happens over there. And I am not surprised to hear the figure of suicide amongst ex-soldiers, because that is what probably they do, and when they come home, in it haunts them. As what have we done? The general described this moment of stupidity. I don't think, I've never been to a crime, near to a crime like this, but any murder you do or one do would be done in a moment of stupidity, because if you are a thinking person, you will never put a gun or a knife to somebody, because each and every life is sacred. You only live once. When you capture a person in a warlike situation, as you described in that audio, I think you have a moral responsibility. That person on the other end is not able to defend, not able to do anything. If he had a gun and he was shooting at you and you shot him, instead of shooting at his leg, you shot him in his head. That could be seen as fair, because you are both having a go at each other.
Yeah.
But a person who is totally defenseless, who is, and has, you also mentioned that this person's action were carefully choreographed, because he said, let's take him out of the camera view.
Didn't want to be seen by the helicopter, yes.
So the helicopter don't see it. Because they both were bent on doing the job of a murder.
And it is a murder, isn't it?
I'm very surprised that judge released the other person without any sentencing.
So what do you think should happen to Marie May?
I think Geneva Convention should be applied to any and all soldiers, not to Afghan soldiers, and it should be applied to Afghan soldiers and not to British. I don't think so.
So what? Life should be a life sentence, 20 years, 30 years?
That is up to the judge to give him the appropriate sentence.
You'd support that if that was the case?
I would. If the judge give him the maximum sentence, yes, I would. I would stand by the judge.
Shafiq, stay there a second. I just want to bring Craig from Dudley into the conversation. Shafiq, stay on the line, please. Craig, you just heard what Shafiq had to say. I believe you're a former serviceman. What's your opinion on this?
Yeah, the guy should get 5 years maximum, a sergeant should. What you got to remember, it's all right for civilians to cast judgments on what soldiers should be doing and they shouldn't. Civilians don't understand what it's like to be in a wartime battlefield and some of the atrocities that the enemy carries out. What you got to remember, this platoon sergeant, which is what he was, lost 7 of his colleagues in that tour of duty of Afghanistan. The Taliban was hanging their body parts upon trees.
And does that make murder? Does that make murder okay?
Absolutely not. As a professional soldier, which I was, I actually served underneath Bob Stewart in Bosnia in the early 90s, you're governed by the Geneva Convention. So if you take, say you've got two casualties, one of them's your own side and one of them's the enemy, and the enemy's worst injured, you focus all your resources onto the most injured person. And if that's the enemy, then that's the enemy. Right? You don't drag someone out of the bushes, an enemy fighter, who's seriously injured, and finish him off.
Well, then surely...
If he's not got the weapon in his hand.
No.
If he's got the weapon in his hand, and then he's intent to use that weapon, then yes.
It's cowardly, isn't it?
It is cowardly.
Well, then we should do... Craig, then we should do what Shafiq says, then, if that's the case. If he's been a coward and he's broken the rules, then Shafiq says that he should get a long sentence.
He should get five years maximum. Not a full life sentence, because that guy's probably been in Afghanistan 7 months. He's probably done 3 to 4 tours, if he's a platoon sergeant, prior to that. He's probably lost, I don't know, 12, 13 of his mates in Afghanistan. And he's probably been fighting on that tour for about 5 months solid.
Craig, let me put that to Shafiq. Craig there, he's a former serviceman. He's saying 5 years maximum. As he's been punished enough.
What I think you must appreciate, and I think what Craig needs to appreciate, is he is making...
In the boots of a soldier.
Craig, hang on a second. Craig, hang on. Just let Shafiq have a word, then you can come back in. Go on, Shafiq.
What Craig is saying is he probably lost 12 or 13 of his colleagues. How long? In what duration? If he lost in same event, then mentally he may be thinking differently. But at the same time, you have the commanders who are there to observe Geneva Convention. They should tell you, okay, this person is injured. This should not be killed, shot upon.
Shafiq, Craig is suggesting that because he's lost 8, 9, 10 of his colleagues, he's been punished enough. He's suffered enough, hasn't he?
It doesn't make... I think it makes a mockery of a law.
Right. Do you know what it's like to be shot at for 6 or 7 months solid? Even though you're a trained professional soldier. Do you know what it's like to go on patrol?
I am not a soldier, Craig.
On an IED. No, you don't, because you're not a soldier. Maybe if you were to step foot on that battlefield for 6 or 7 months and put your feet in their boots, you'd probably understand a little bit more instead of casting judgment.
I'm not casting a judgment on no one, but what I'm telling you, two wrongs never make one right. I think a law must be law, and the Geneva Convention during the war situation must be applied.
You try telling the Taliban that and to adhere to the Geneva Convention, yeah?
Well, I think...
Craig, hang on a second. Let Shafiq respond.
If you let me have a couple of words. We don't know how many of the... friends or colleagues that Afghan Taliban has lost. I have no sympathy for anybody,
right.
Remember.
It's a tough love, ain't it? It's been a tough love. They're terrorists, they never die.
They are terrorists and they are killing innocent people.
We're in Afghanistan losing blood, losing blokes, to get rid of a Taliban out of that country to bring some form of democracy.
But Craig, doesn't this... The Taliban will now be completely aware of this. This means if they capture a British soldier... They're going to shoot him. They're making it worse.
They would have shot a British soldier.
But now,
that's their main aim.
No, but now they have the publicity and to justify their killing. There will now be more sympathy from potential supporters for them killing a British soldier.
The Taliban have always justified what they carry out. You know, if they could capture a British soldier or an American soldier. Even before this happened, they'd probably torture him to death.
Shafiq, listen, I'm going to say thank you.
Craig, Taliban are terrorists. They are a bunch of terrorists, and they don't kill soldiers. They kill innocent people. But a soldier, he is the ambassador of a country. He is the one who need to observe the law. That is what I'm trying to say.
Shafiq, I'm going to say thank you very much. Craig, while I've got you on, and I appreciate...
Hey, I've got one more thing to say.
Go on then, very quickly, and I'll ask you something else.
This court-martial as well is a bit of a kangaroo court, to be honest with you.
Go on.
But you should have an independent body, right, within the court, judging the soldier, not his colleagues, not his NCOs and his senior officers.
Craig, while I've got you on the line, can I ask you something about... Are you aware of these Call of Duty video games?
Well, I don't play on the computer.
Well, I was going to say, you basically run around sometimes in recreated war scenarios, sometimes in fantasy war scenarios, arsenal of weapons, you go around shooting people. What do you think of those games, Craig?
I think, you got people who love them.
As someone who's served, and someone who is, and I don't want to know what you got up to, but someone who has served in the military... Do you think it's right that young people, kids, can be at home playing these things, recreating some of the things that you may have done?
No, but I mean, I've got a four-year-old son, and, I'll certainly won't let him play any of those games when he gets older.
Craig, thank you very much indeed. I'd still be interesting to get the opinion of someone who has served. 08 453 00 9 56. We'll carry on talking about this Marine. If you've got any sympathy for him, Ranjit and Paul will come to you shortly. But I want to expand it out slightly to talk about these Call of Duty games. Are they tasteless? Is it wrong to be playing video games where you run around with various guns, shooting people, sneaking up behind people and garrotting them? Or is it just a bit of fun? Come on, guys, chill out. 08 453 00 9 56. I'm Ian Lee. This is BBC WM. It's 9:45.
Longbridge,
Quarry Bank,
Sturgeley,
Rowley Regis,
and Harbourne. Have your say across the West Midlands on BBC WM 95.6.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, filling in for Nick, who's off poorly, bless him. A retired Royal Marines commander has appealed for leniency in the sentencing of a commando found guilty of murdering a wounded Taliban fighter in Afghanistan. The judge at a court-martial in Wiltshire yesterday told the serviceman, known only as Marine A, that he would face a mandatory life sentence, but the minimum term has yet to be set. Major General Julian Thompson, who led three commando brigade during the Falklands War, told the Times that life imprisonment would be too harsh. Too harsh. What do you think? It's a murder that's been committed outside the rules of war. And I know, isn't it weird to think there are rules of war? But there are. 08459 455 555. Paul Ranjit, stay there. I will come to you in a second. First of all, I want to speak to Francis Tusa, who is a defence analyst and served in the British Army. Good morning, Francis. Francis, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you very much indeed. Sorry, this is not my usual studio, so my fingers are occasionally pressing the wrong buttons. Now, Francis, what do you think? Should we be showing leniency towards Marine A?
It is going to be one of those judgments of Solomon. There's been a lot of talk through the trial of not showing pictures, not releasing the videos in case it acts as a recruiting tool for groups and so forth. However, I think we need to be aware that showing excessive leniency would be jumped upon just as much as a recruiting tool. People would say, there you are, they say one thing but do another. I suspect you will find that authorities will be looking for a harsher rather than a more lenient. Please note the conditional. Whether the life sentence is 25 years, I would doubt, but I think they have to put down a marker that in a disciplined armed forces, these types of things are really just not acceptable.
I was surprised that the audio was released, as we were being told there'll be no video, there will be no pictures, there will be nothing, and then the audio just kind of suddenly appeared. Why have they released it, do you think?
Very interesting, because I would have thought it would be possible, not easy, but it would be possible to start to make some identification. Mm. So releasing anything at all runs that risk. However, on the other side, I think it was possibly released to ensure that in the wake of a guilty verdict, few people would be saying, oh, come on, you can't find them guilty, because the audio, put it mildly, sounds rather damning.
Well, the audio is awful, and what surprises me, and you've served, so maybe you can explain this.
Many years ago,
a long time ago. What surprises me is just how calm the soldiers sound, the Marines sound. Is that normal, kind of a calmness in a situation like that? It's a unique situation, we hope. But that calmness, is that something that they get from training?
The point of training is to try and make sure that people will do things under extreme stress, in the best sense, without thinking, that things are drilled into them, you know, hence drill originally, and so that they can function. And certainly calmness is something you find being reported in lots of people's memoirs and so forth about how things seem to be moving incredibly slowly. The other side you can find is, which again reported on widely, is people having been so pumped up on adrenaline, once they start to be on a downer, of course, they can sound quite lethargic.
Mm. One of the things we've been hearing from, we've had lots of calls from people who have served, something I've never done, is that they have described some of the things that they've seen and how they have lost their friends and things they've had to pick up off of battlefields. Are those extenuating circumstances, do you think?
The answer is going to be, of course, yes and no. If someone has been under ridiculous levels of stress, for the sake of argument, has been under in combat for days and days, there will almost certainly, to any normal person, have been psychological and mental issues attached with that. However, I think you come down to possibly the quite, could be viewed as harsh, view that if we believe we have disciplined armed forces, then you cannot turn a blind eye to people who knowingly say, oh, I've just broken the Geneva Convention, guys.
Mm.
And we should remember that people in the modern armed forces of, I would say, all the major Western countries, before deploying to places like Afghanistan, they are given numerous lectures and presentations on laws of war and so forth.
They know the rules.
This is not something someone saying, sorry, but what can we do more calmly? No, the legal side, actually, if you look in the last week, it was either the Times or the Telegraph had an article pointing out the number of lawyers employed by the Ministry of Defence has grown by something like 300. Wow. And this is because the whole issue of law in combat is no longer something that's just abstract. It is absolutely at the forefront of combat today.
And an incident like this, which I'm sure is being talked about around the world, is bad for Britain and bad for the British military, isn't it?
It is, to the extent that you can say that the discipline has, the guard has dropped and someone has done something which they know they shouldn't have done. And so that does reflect indirectly, if not directly, on everyone else. And hence, that's why I suspect a degree of leniency might be shown, but there is also going to be a degree to which an example is going to have to be made. And it is just simply to try, and it may sound harsh, to try and restore the belief that the British Armed Forces are disciplined and that this is a one-off. And it's going to remain a one-off.
Francis, while I've got you on, if I could just pick your brains on something else you may or may not be able to help me with. We're talking as well about games like Call of Duty, which I don't know if you know it. It's a war game on the Xbox and PlayStation. Mm-hmm. You run around various war scenarios and shoot people and throw bombs and drive tanks, all that kind of thing. Well, as someone who has served and is now a defence analyst, what's your opinion of those kind of games? Do you think they're damaging and it demeans the impact of war?
Well, difficult one, because increasingly a lot of training done from individual infantrymen through to people who are operating tanks and so forth will be done with high resolution graphic systems very similar to those you will see in, I was going to say kids' games, but I realise they're not kids' games, so they're played by a wider variety of people. So the military has actually benefited from the technology in those type of games for at least the past decade. Is there a concern that some people, as regular players, might be desensitised? I think that's got to be a possibility. And then, though I've never heard it linked directly, but I wouldn't be surprised that someone has said, we do have to give more training on the laws of war, the rules of engagement and so forth, to make sure that people don't just assume it's the same rules as Call of Duty. But I must confess, I've not heard that one mentioned before, but I would not be surprised if people were thinking about
Francis,
that.
Francis, I really appreciate your time this morning. That's Francis Tusa, defence analyst. I have such trouble with that word, analyst. When I see it written in front of me, I always have to do a little pause before I have to run up to it. Years ago, let me digress slightly. Years ago, I was filming a TV show, and the word analyst was on the screen on the autocue, and I had to read it 10 times. I couldn't do it. And when we went for the 11th time, they had cleverly changed the word to expert, and I got through it perfectly. 08453 009956 is the telephone number. Call of Duty kind of segueing nicely. Is that too inappropriate? Anyway, kind of it's slotting into this conversation. We'll talk about that more in the next hour. Do you think these games are damaging? They are demeaning, disrespectful to war. Or they're just a little bit of fun. Listen, I'm a grown man. If I want to sit down and play a little bit of Call of Duty Ghosts, for that is the new one, for a couple of hours, that's fine. I don't think it's going to encourage me to go and find a gun and go on a rampage. 08453 009956. But on the subject of Marine A, and should we have any sympathy for him? Ranjit, I do apologise. You've been waiting for 30 minutes. What would you like to say?
Yes, even though I'm not a fan of war and killing, yeah, okay, there's a phrase called all's fair in love and war.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the rules of engagement, I understand what that happens, what they say. These kind of things have been going on for years. There was a Sikh massacre in Amritsar by the British Army, and then there was another one by the Indian Army. These things are going to carry on going on. They're not going to stop. A good soldier joins any army in the world to defend freedom. And what happens is, like all your callers have said, he's seen his colleagues' limbs hanging on washing lines and stuff like that. Psychologically, it's going to mess him up.
Yeah.
Right? Now,
it's not an excuse for murder, though, is it? Because I would imagine that a lot of murderers are psychologically messed up. But we don't go, oh, well, they were abused as a child and they may have seen their dad getting knocked down. We don't use that, do we?
No, I wouldn't call this a murder. I don't call it a murder. This is in... Well, it's wrong.
The court have called it a murder.
No, I wouldn't... In my opinion, I don't call it a murder.
British law has called it a murder.
It's in the battlefield where this has happened.
Yeah.
Now,
a murder
in
the
argument is... I've never had any kind of military experience, but I wouldn't want to work with people that are going to snitch on me once I've done something wrong. Now, a good soldier joins the army, like I say, to defend freedom, And the worst punishment you can give a soldier is to give him a dishonourable discharge from the army.
Well, I'd imagine sending him to prison, he would consider a slightly worse
but
punishment.
No, sending them to prison is just incarcerating him.
Yeah, that's what prison is, yes.
Giving him a just remember what I'm saying, dishonourable discharge.
How about both?
Well, he's going to get that anyway, the dishonourable discharge out of the army. But
Ranjit, you can't just murder someone and then lose your job. That can't be the only punishment you receive. Yeah, you killed someone the other day, so I'm sorry, you're fired. Well, and we're not going to buy you a gold watch.
No, you're not going to buy him a gold watch. Yes, you're going to fire him. But, you know, all these soldiers, some of them, have been sent an email that you're fired in Afghanistan because of the cutbacks.
Right.
So these people now, psychologically, because of
Ranjit, you can't use the fact that someone has been fired to excuse a murder. No. Loads of people have been fired. We've not had people going off and knocking other people off because they're confused.
You're looking at a situation where adrenaline, everything is on top of you. Even though they're professionally trained to take these pressures, you know, one person can go wrong. That doesn't mean the whole of the armies in the whole of the world are the same.
And I hope that message, Ranjit, I hope that message isn't coming across, and not for any way kind of tarring all soldiers with this same slightly messy brush. I just want to squeeze Paul in before the news at 10. Paul's in Warwick. Paul, you've got a minute. What would you like to say?
Very briefly, if you believe what you read in the press, I've read that the Afghanistani had been hit by 132 Apache helicopter rounds. They're 30mm. They're 6 times bigger than a regular SA-80 round. What was the chances of that guy surviving? And more to the point, I don't know about you, but if I'd been hit by 130 rounds of Apache helicopter ammunition, I'd be very grateful for somebody popping a bullet through my chest.
Paul, thank you very much indeed. That's Paul there. In Warwick. Lots of mixed views on this. Thank you so much. We're going to keep talking about this throughout the rest of the show. So if you didn't get your say, then do give me a call. 08453 009956. Any sympathy for Marine A? Let's expand it slightly and talk a little bit about this Call of Duty game. Have you had a go? I bet you've not. I'm looking forward to having a go. Cards on the table. I'm a little bit of a gamer. And I'm looking forward to it. Do you think it's tasteless? Disrespectful? 08453 009956, or you can send me a text, 81333, start your text WM. I'm Ian Lee, sitting in for Nick Comrade. It's coming up. Oh, it's coming up to 10.
BBC WM
95.6.
Teachers, if you don't like it, get out of it.
Pensioners who can't do anything to boost her income.
Abduction, as far as I'm aware, she actually went willingly.
Ian Lee, Saturdays
9 till 12. BBC WM
95.6.
Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM, sitting in for Nick Comrade. He's off poorly again this week. Get well soon, Nick. You've been very kind. Lots of phone calls this morning and more to come. We're going to continue our discussion of Marine A, found guilty of murder, being sentenced to life. Should we be lenient on him? Do you have any sympathy for him? You can give me a call, 08453 009956. Are games like Call of Duty, war games, very graphic video games where you run around shooting and blowing people up, are they desensitising us to war? Are they disrespectful? Or do you think, for goodness sakes, they're just a little bit of fun? And also, a Wolverhampton prison has introduced a strict dress code for its visitors. More and more is what I was going to say. That makes no sense whatsoever. So press the button. Let's get out of this.
Call 08453
009956. Ian Lee on BBC WM
95.6.
You know, sometimes, does this happen to you? It happens to me all the time. I think it's me going older. I just get lost. I get into the middle of a sentence and think, I have no idea how this sentence is going to end. Sometimes I see that sentence through to its conclusion. Other times, it's worth just putting your hands up and bailing out, as I did then. I hope you don't think any less of me. 08453 009956. You can send me a text, 81333. Start your text, WM. You can also send me an email, ian.lwe@bbc.co.uk. Well, we're talking about war. It's war themed tomorrow, which I suppose is appropriate as it's Remembrance Sunday tomorrow. But do we really remember? Do we really know what's going on? Are we aware of the horrors of war? We've heard some pretty grim stories this morning, and those are the tamer ones. Well, are we losing sight of what war is all about? The new Call of Duty was released this week, one of the biggest selling games of all time. Video games these days make more money than movies and albums. Who'd have thought it? Albums. I'm dating myself there. But are games like Call of Duty disrespectful and kind of desensitising us to the horrors of war? Well, I'm joined now by Trevor Poole, who is chairman of the Great War Society of Living Historians. Good morning, Trevor.
Good morning.
Do games like Call of Duty desensitise us to war? Are they disrespectful?
Well, you've got 2 points there. I think to be disrespectful, you've got to say or do something which is overtly disrespectful or insulting towards the armed forces, those who have served, those who've paid the sacrifice in a world war in the past. Probably, inherently, they're not disrespectful, but I think certainly they probably do desensitise people, if indeed the people who play them in the first place have even got any idea what it's like to be in action. They probably do perhaps desensitise people to the realities of actual combat, actually going into action against the enemy.
The Great War Society, Trevor, tell me a bit about it.
The Great War Society is a living history society whose aim is to perpetuate the memory of the sacrifice of the men and indeed the women who went to war in 1914-18. And we do that through living history activities to educate the public as to the uniforms and equipment and the weaponry and tactics which were used at the time.
And how long has it been going for, the Great War Society?
The society itself has been going since 1984, sort of 28 years now.
Do you think that young people, and let's categorise them, let's say under 25, people under 25 they're just not interested in war? Do you get that impression? And the sacrifices that people have made for them?
No, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it depends on how you approach the subject. But I think if you can actually engage people's attention, and especially people of that sort of age group, and actually get them interested in, you know, why perhaps in the Great War we had to go to war, why we went to war, why things were done the way that that they were done, then I think you can actually get them interested. I mean, it's all a question of engaging that interest, and certainly the way in which we go about our business. We sort of do talks for educational bodies and for the Air Training Corps, the Army Cadets, regimental associations, and in schools. I think if you actually give them a sort of hands-on opportunity to look at, you know, the weapons and look at the uniform and make a comparison with the way things are today, that I think is a route to remembrance.
You're right. I take one of my favourite places of my boys is the RAF Museum in Hendon, which is an amazing place. But I mean, they're 4 and 2, so they're still quite young, and they love it. They love going and looking at all the planes. But they discovered the bomb section, the bombs, and I kind of had to explain to them tactfully and age appropriately that what they were and why we don't particularly like them. Because of what they are capable of doing. It's hard, isn't it, to get that line of the excitement around the weapons and actually explaining, they do some pretty horrible things.
Yes, I think it is a fine line. It's one of those things. I think if you're delivering a talk to children, that they always seem to have a little more fascination with the weaponry, be that a rifle or a bayonet, or in the case you quote, a bomb which is dropped from an aircraft. I don't know what the answer is to that, to be perfectly honest, but it just seems to be the way children are. But it's our responsibility to, as you say, explain things age appropriately and make them understand.
Trevor, very quickly, if people want to find out more about the Great War Society, where can they go?
They can go, as pretty much anyone goes on the internet these days, www.thegreatwarsociety.com.
Brilliant. Trevor Poole, thank you very much indeed. Chairman of the Great War Society. These video games, cards on the table, I like playing video games. I've not had a chance to play many recently. As I said, I've got two boys who are nearly 4 and 2, and I do a job in the week that involves me getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Oh, fun times! So I'm lucky if I get to watch half a film in a setting. I'm halfway through Annie Hall at the moment. What happens? Will they get back together? I don't know. So I've not played the new Call of Duty. I have played Call of Duty games before, and I will enjoy playing this at some point. Are they are they inappropriate? Should we get rid of them, or are they just a bit harmless fun? We watch war films, don't we? We watch war films. They're entertainment. Some people have the nonsense argument that watching films is passive while playing video games is interactive just because you're tapping a button. I'm not sure I quite buy into that. 08453 009956. Kay's in Wolverhampton. Good morning, Kay.
Hello there.
Kay, do you play these games?
No, I don't. And I wish I'd never bought them from the Sun.
Go on, tell me why.
They're addictive, and at times when I've looked at them and looked at him playing and seen some of the scenes on there, I think, hang on a bit, you shouldn't be exposed to this. They're horrible.
What kind of stuff have you seen?
Him shooting, and especially when they're playing with other people across the internet.
Yeah.
They're competing with people around the world about who can kill who. And, you know, I just think that, I think I heard something the other day that said, I think it was your program actually, that said, you know, people who shoot birds and so on with air rifles, how soon will they shoot another human being? And I think the games fall into the same category. I wish I'd never, never, never bought them for him.
But your son, unless there is something seriously wrong with him mentally, which I'm sure they're not, your son will be able to differentiate between tapping a red button and shooting a computer image on the screen, and the difference between that and doing it to a real person. And I'm sure He would never cross that line.
I think the games influence it, and I feel that the games make it oblivious that they're doing it for real or they're doing it on a computer game, and I'm going to try and get him off it.
Good luck with that. How are you planning to do that?
Slowly.
Yeah.
So, you know, take the controllers off him, which I have done for a couple of weeks, give them to him for a treat, make sure he's not playing at night. There's another point I wanted to make about the chap who got sent down for life.
Yeah.
The soldier.
Yes.
Now, you know, in the UK, there's something that we never consider. We always think that the rest of the world has the same standards we have, and, you know, they should apply. But one thing most people in the UK don't know is how horrible the rest of the world has become, especially the Middle East and so on.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're going to send our soldiers over there, and I'm a Sikh, by the way, so when I say our soldiers, I mean our British soldiers.
Yeah.
Then we need them, right, to be able to compete or fight against the ruthlessness that is out there in those countries. However, we need to balance at some point to say, you know, okay, we have our standards. But there's a big debate to be had here as to whether we can apply our standards from the UK to our soldiers who have to compete, if you like, with what's out there in the world. Kay, I don't know the answer to that.
No. Kay, listen, we've got to end it there because I need to get to Liz and the travel. Thank you very much indeed for that. Kay, good luck to trying to take that game off your son. That ain't never going to happen. That is never going to... If you're going to take it off him, take it off him. But, in fairness, he'll go around to his mates and play it. But the thing about these games are, I didn't find out how old Kay's son was, these games are age-restricted. They are age-restricted. So I think the new Call of Duty is 16. I think the games like Grand Theft Auto, I think, is an 18. So if Kay is buying, I've just been told his son is 14, if Kay is buying games that are rated 16 and 18 for his 14-year-old son, well then, parenting? Anybody? I don't know. Matthew, we'll speak to you in a few minutes. 08453 009956. This is Ian Lee on BBC WM. Morning, Ian Lee, BBC WM, sitting in for Nick Conrad. Lots to talk about. Call of Duty, the Marine A, who's being sentenced to life for murder. We'll be talking as well about the Beatles versus Elvis a bit later on. Who is the best? It's the Beatles, obviously. Let's be honest, Elvis, load of old rubbish. He's done, I will give you five, I could probably think of a push, five good Elvis songs. We'll talk about him after 11 and coming up in a few minutes. Dress codes in prisons for the visitors. But before that, he's been waiting a few minutes. Matthew is in Wolverhampton. Good morning, Matthew. Sorry to keep you waiting. What would you like to say?
Good morning. We've today been talking about Marine A and the circumstances of soldiers in the heat and reality of war.
Yes.
Now, 4 years ago today,
My little brother was in the heat and reality of war. And he was a sergeant of a company of riflemen in Afghanistan. And he was walking towards an IED, an improvised explosive device. And in disarming it to save his men, it was set off and he was killed. So I understand what Marine A was enduring. I understand the pain and the anguish and the mental turbulence of that loss that he himself had endured. But at the same time, I still condemn any torture, mistreatment, or murder of prisoners. It is not acceptable in any civilized society.
Why do you you surprised me with your last statement there, Matthew, if I'm honest. Why is it unacceptable, do you think?
Because we are all people together on one world. We all breathe the same air. We all feel the same feelings. Just tying into the chap from the Great War Society, I'm not a soldier, never have been, never been military, but I am a historian, and I do a great deal of work teaching the history of the First World War to children today. And I provide them with letters, both from British soldiers, Commonwealth soldiers, soldiers from what would be Pakistan today and India, and soldiers from Germany and France. And you read those letters, and you realize that all these soldiers are the same, with the same fears, the same hopes, all terrified of the war, all enduring it, all hoping it will be over soon. And so the youngster, probably a youngster, who killed my little brother, he was no different to me. I don't wish him pain or death at all. You know, I'd want to be reconciled with him, because I'm sure he, in turn, has suffered pain and loss.
That's an incredible attitude to take, Matthew, to the person or people who are responsible for your brother's death, that you don't wish him any malice. How did you manage to come to that position?
This is from the way I've been brought up. So it is very much the core of my being. When I was a little boy, many years ago in a far-off third-world country called Yorkshire,
I've heard tale of it, yes, yes.
Yes. I met a man who'd served in the First World War with one of the PALS regiments, and he'd been in the Somme. He himself was childless, so he adopted me as his grandson. And I was a wonderful extra grandfather to me. And he told me about the time when he went over the top in the Battle of the Somme. He, at the time, was underage. He was only 17. He was tiny. He was 5'1", was Walter. So off he went over the top with all his pals, all being mown down by machine guns, left, right and centre. And in the middle of no man's land, he bumped into an great big man with his rifle and with his bayonet. And it was the job of that German soldier to put a bayonet through my grandfather. That was his job. That was his duty as a soldier. But he looked down and he didn't see an enemy. He looked down and saw a scared boy, a scared little boy. And he patted him on the head, and he said, "Ah, little Tommy, your trench is that way. Go home." So in the midst of war, in the midst of the most hellish circumstances, there will always be hope. There will always be humanity. And that German soldier, instead of doing his duty and killing Walter, he let him live on from 1917, that date, and lived all the way through to 1981.
Wow. Matthew, would you go as far as saying you forgive the people that killed your brother?
Totally, absolutely.
That really is that's incredible that you are able to do that. May I ask, what's your brother's name? Are you happy saying that, or would you rather not?
Yeah, Phil.
Phil, because we're talking about Phil, and it would be nice to put a name.
Yeah,
to
Sergeant
him.
Sergeant in B Company 3 Rifles.
Mm. There will be people listening to this, and we may get some calls from people who want to comment on this, who will be shocked and amazed that you are able to forgive the people that blew up Phil. What would you say to those people?
What you have to do is look and listen to the people you're dealing with. It's no good just talking to your friends. You've got to look and listen to, communicate with the people you perceive as enemies. And if you do that, you find out they're just the same. Now, I've been privileged to travel all over the world to some extraordinary places. I was behind the bamboo wall of China in communist China in the 1980s, when it was an unknown country to most people. I've been to places in Africa you wouldn't even dream of. And wherever I've been, no matter what people's religion, no matter what the color of their skin, no matter what their ideology is, they are all the same.
Mm.
Everyone wakes up in the morning and, you know, wants a cup of tea or whatever their equivalent, wants to do their job, have a nice standard of living, send their children to school, live in peace. People actually don't want to go around blowing each other up, and they are forced into these circumstances against their will. So Phil was a professional soldier. He really loved being a soldier, enjoyed it very much. He was a very good soldier, but he would have been happy being at home in the woods of Yorkshire, where he belonged to be. And the same with the boy who blew him up. I mean, most of the IEDs are set off by children.
Mm.
That boy should have been in school.
Matthew, we have to end it there because we have to move on, but thank you for that. That's one of the most amazing calls I've heard on a phoning show for a long, long time. Maybe you want to have your say in that. I've got shivers down my spine listening to that incredible call, Matthew. Thank you. He forgives the boys, the soldiers, the men, whoever, that set the bomb that killed his brother Phil in Afghanistan 4 years ago today. He forgives them. Doesn't bear any malice, and he disapproves of torture and unnecessary killing in the battlefield. I'm speechless after that. I am speechless. Maybe you'd like to have your say on that. 08453 009956. Now, moving on to other things, a Wolverhampton prison has introduced a strict dress code for visitors. The code includes no short skirts or revealing tops, and visitors are also warned to avoid inappropriate physical interaction. Well, HMP Oakwood's director was compared to Saudi Arabia by prison reform campaigners who said it would affect women trying to visit their partners who are behind bars. Well, Francis Crook is chief executive of the Howard League for Penal Reform, joins me on the line now. Morning, Francis.
Good morning.
What do you think about these new rules that are being introduced?
I think it's interesting, following on from your last conversation, that, you know, we do have to forgive people who do things wrong. And just because people are in prison, we mustn't just sort of pile on the punishment. And, of course, the people who are innocent here are the wives and the girlfriends who want to go and visit with their children often, but visit their partners. And I've had women who've told me that one woman who turned up and travelled a long journey to visit her partner. She was wearing a straight black dress with a polo neck and long sleeves and thick black tights. But because her dress was an inch above the knee, she was turned away and she couldn't see her partner, and she had to go home. And she paid all that money and spent all that time to go and see him, and then she couldn't go and see him for another 2 weeks. So she missed out on a visit for a month because it's, you know, it's every 2 weeks for her. And I think that's really, you know, we know that if you want people to turn their lives around, if you want them to settle back in the community safely and live a crime-free life, the best thing that you can do is a home, a job, and the love of a good woman or a good man. And, you know, the family relationships are absolutely critical to people.
I've got some of the guidelines here from this prison. Skirts must be of a reasonable length and reach the knee in the standing position. High-cut shorts are not permitted. Dresses must be of reasonable length. Tops must be sufficient to cover both breasts and the midriff area and must not be transparent. Cleavage must be appropriately covered so as not to cause offence. That all sounds fair enough to me.
Well, I think the thing is that you do, it's perfectly reasonable, and prisons have asked visitors to dress decently. But once you start creating a list and saying you can do this and you can't do that, you can't wear a football logo of one team, you end up with completely ridiculous rules.
Torn jeans with holes revealing the buttocks or underwear may not be worn. That sounds like a good rule, doesn't it?
Well, I think what you say is you say to people, be decent, be respectful. And that's what prisons normally do. The thing about Oakwood, which is, of course, run by G4S, is the management there, as we know, is not the best in the country. And I'm putting that carefully. And so that these rules are applied capriciously. So some women are allowed in wearing these things and some women aren't allowed in. And it's not fair because the staff don't really understand what the rules mean. They don't like to apply them. They're not managed properly. So that one day you can go in wearing a slightly low-cut top with a little bit of cleavage and the next week you go in, you can't. And what is a bit of cleavage? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's much better to say to people, be decent, be respectful, and then let women their partners. The most important thing is to keep up family contact.
But the problem is, and of course that is an incredibly important thing, but the problem with this clothing thing is look at people walking the streets of Birmingham. Lots of people don't know what decent is. Oh my goodness, I don't want to see someone's midriff. I don't want to see someone's buttocks as they walk. Well, people don't know what appropriate is, do they, half the time? And surely it's good if some rules and guidelines are set, then people can look at those and know what they have to do. It makes things easier, doesn't it, for everybody?
Well, I agree with you. I think people should dress decently and respectfully. But, you know, when it's hot, people wear fewer clothes. But I think the point is that you can ask people to do this. You can't then stop someone visiting their partner when they've travelled 100 miles to get there and paid money to get there and say, oh, no, because you've got a bit of cleavage or your skirt is an inch too short, you can't see your partner, you've got to go home. That is not right. Well, and that's what G4S has been doing.
But if they've broken the rules, could it not be like, you know...
But they don't know what the rules are. How are they meant to know what the rules are until they get there? These women, they weren't told in advance.
Should be on the website. It'll be on the website.
Not everybody, believe me, has access to the website.
Libraries.
And looks at it.
Everybody. Well, listen, if my wife was in prison, I would make sure I checked out that website in every great detail. Of course you would.
Interesting, if you're in prison, you do not have access to the internet.
No, if you're
the
prisoners. That's it. Francis, that's a very poor argument. The prisoners don't know about it. It's not up to them to know about it. It's the visitors.
When you're going to visit your partner, you're bringing your kids, the last thing you're doing is looking up on the website to see what you can and can't wear. Women were turned away. This is the only prison in the country that's doing this. This is a G4S idiosyncrasy. No other prison does this. Other prisons give guidance and support to women who are visiting their partners, and that's the most important thing. This is a sort of capricious, weird management thing, which is applied inappropriately and not properly to women. So sometimes they are turned away and sometimes they're not.
200, 300, 400 men. I don't know how many prisons this. Let's say it holds 300 men.
It's a big prison. Okay. It's nearly 1,000.
Okay, so 1,000 men, even worse, 1,000 men in a prison, okay? If they come down and they, you know, that Charlie's missus, Sue, is going to turn up in a short skirt, high heels, and a low-cut top, they can't be getting excited by things like that, can they?
Well, actually, prisoners have access in prisons to things that will be far more exciting than Sue turning up with a little bit of cleavage showing. I mean, actually, the other thing is, of course, that the women want to dress up for their men. They want to look smart and pretty because they want to, you know, to be kind to their men. You don't turn up wearing slouchy trousers and things. And if they were turning up wearing something inappropriate, would it not be impossible for the prison to provide a sweatshirt or something to ask them
to wear? Well, yes, that may be an idea. You get a little shawl or a jacket or something to wear.
That's why I'm saying this is a management issue. It's not actually about what the women are. Don't blame the women for this. And don't blame the prisoners. This is an issue about poor management and poor guidance given by the prison, which is, you know, it's not being run properly. We know it's in chaos. The inspection report showed Oakwood to be the worst run prison in the country. And this is another example of poor management.
Francis, I really appreciate your time on this morning. That's Francis Crook, Chief Executive of the Howard League for Penal Reform. You can have your say on that if you want. 08453 00956. Dress code for visitors to prisons. Should there be? You kind of have to keep, I'd imagine, how can I phrase this carefully, the temperature down. Do you know what I'm saying? In prisons, you get 1,000 men locked up. Got to keep the temperature down a little bit, haven't you? And if that means people have to cover themselves up, that's a good thing. Or is it unfair on the prisoners? Surely it would have been nice for them to see. I don't know why I'm picking on Sue. I've no idea this Sue is. And if Sue is married to a gentleman called Charlie, who's in the prison, I apologise. But if Sue wants to dress up sexy, I think I can say that word, on BBC WM, then shouldn't she be allowed? 08453 00956. That's also the number to call about video games. And Matthew, who we heard a few minutes ago, talking about his brother Phil, who was murdered, was killed 4 years ago in Afghanistan. He's forgiven. He has forgiven the people that did it. And also, if you want to talk about Marine A. But now, we've been talking about this on the station for the last week or so. Now, the time has come. Are you as excited as I'm excited? As you know, BBC WM 95.6 is the voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. And a few months ago, it was decided that we needed to find some of you to be part of our radio station sound, the voices that you hear on all our jingles and trails. So, throughout the summer, we sent a team of people out with microphones to speak to hundreds of you, and we're going to continue that search to find even more voices. Some incredible people were met, and so far we've found 10 people who will become BBC WM's Voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. It's not just a song. It's not just a song. If you go to the website, bbc.co.uk/WM, you can watch the video. Fantastic. Put some faces to the voices, and of course, please share it with your friends and your family. Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM, filling in for Nick Conrad, who's poorly. Get well soon. Nick, 08453 00956 is the phone number. I've had some emails as well here. David says, only the living can forgive, the dead have no choice. Ian, I'm English, I wear a poppy, I don't agree with the war in Afghanistan. When England bombed Dresden in the Second World War, quick history lesson, okay? So Dresden was a city in Germany. And right just before the end, it didn't really have a lot to do. I think they made ball bearings that were used in weapons, but that was it. It wasn't a military base. It was a civilian city. Some of the most beautiful architecture in the world. Just before the end of the war, English and American bombers flew over. The first ones dropped bombs and bits of wood that smashed the buildings and dropped wood everywhere. The second one then dropped fire. Okay, so they burnt the whole city down. That's what Dresden is. David says, when England bombed Dresden in the Second World War, which killed 25,000 civilians and destroyed the entire city centre, were we breaking the Geneva Convention? Was that murder? Should those pilots have gone to prison? I think the Geneva Convention was 1949. I know there were other treaties before that, but I think 1949 is the Geneva Convention. Someone will correct me on my history. Was it murder? Well, no, but I think Dresden, without going too much down this route, I think Dresden is one of the darker moments in our history during World War II. One of those moments that perhaps we shouldn't feel particularly proud about. Hey, we did some cracking stuff in World War II. We won it. We beat the Nazis. We beat international fascism. Dresden, I'm not sure it's one of our proudest moments. Anyway, we're going off on a slight tangent. If you want to give us a call, 08453 00956. We are talking about Call of Duty and other war games. Are they inappropriate? We're also talking about Marine A. It's on the front page of the Times. It's in other papers. Clemency Peel, plea. I keep getting that word wrong for some reason. For battlefield murder. One of Britain's most distinguished Royal Marines urged clemency for a fellow commando found guilty yesterday of killing a Taliban prisoner in Afghanistan. Major General Julian Thompson, who led British forces to victory in the Falklands, said that life imprisonment for the soldier was too harsh. For those of you who don't quite know what we're talking about, it's been a huge court case. Three soldiers, one of them was found guilty of murder, dragged an Afghanistan wounded soldier to under a tree where he couldn't be seen by the helicopters and shot him. We're going to play the audio from that. I warn you now, it's not particularly nice. So if you have got young ears, or if you don't want to, there is a gunshot. If you don't want to hear that, just switch off for 30 seconds. And you're not supposed to encourage that in radio, but I do think when it's something like this, it's fair to give a warning. So we're going to play that audio now, and then we'll take your calls on the back of it.
I'm going to knock over again.
He said, don't waste your FSDs on Teaser. Take it off him.
Right, get the high camera out so you can take a picture of him, minus all the things.
Where is the cap?
I'm in full time. It's gone that way. Went south, mate.
Yeah, I'll shuffle off his mortal coil, you. Nothing you would do to us.
I know.
Exactly. Alright. Obviously, this doesn't go anywhere, fellas.
Yeah, roger, mate.
I've just broken the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, roger.
That's the sound of a soldier, Marine, committing murder. And he's been found guilty of murder. Any sympathy for him at all? Doreen's in Erdington. Morning, Doreen.
Hello, can I just give you a quickie on Dresden? I think it was done in retaliation for Coventry.
Okay.
at all.
It's not one of our proudest moments,
no,
though,
well,
is it?
No, well, it wasn't one of our proud, Germany's proudest moments when there was bomb Coventry.
It
was only retaliation. It was war, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, I've got a bit of sympathy, but I can't understand one or the other not trying to stop him, whoever was going to do it.
Well, there were two with him, weren't there?
Yeah, why didn't some, say, no, you can't do this, you know. Oh, I wouldn't care whether it was me boss or where it was, I would, why didn't one of them say, no, you can't do this, now calm down, or something,
If you could turn to page 7 of the Times, you'll get an extract from Marine C's diary, and he says, Marine A popped him one himself, I felt mugged off, but job done.
Yes,
he wanted to shoot him.
But I think if you've seen people like that you know, and they've been really badly treated by the Taliban, I think you might, I think when I seen them planes go into the Twin Towers in America, I felt at the time, I could have gone and set fire to every mosque in this country, but, I couldn't blame them, but that's, at that immediate moment, that's how I felt.
Why would you want to set fire to every mosque in this country?
In retaliation for, because, the Taliban, like the Muslim, that was my immediate reaction.
It wasn't the Taliban that
were,
it wasn't the Taliban flying the aeroplanes into the...
Who was it then?
Well, I don't know. But if rumour is to be believed, it's something to do with the Al-Qaeda network.
Well, they're all more or less the same, isn't they? They're all terrorists.
Well, they're kind of quite different. But Dorian, if you had gone off and set fire to every mosque in the country, as it flashed across your mind...
Good. But that,
that would be inappropriate, wouldn't it?
Yes, really. But
so what this soldier did...
So-and-so's. But you don't know what's gone... You don't know how some people's brains affected more than others.
This fella, Marine, has obviously seen things, and we've heard that bits of his friends, and I won't go into any more detail, but were waved at him by
Taliban.
Why did
they photograph it in any case?
Well, they have cameras on their head to make sure things like this don't happen. It didn't work here. But we don't know what he's seen, but he still shouldn't have done what he did. He murdered someone who was wounded, who posed no threat to them whatsoever, and who, under the rules of war, the Geneva Convention, should have been treated. They should have given him medical aid and taken him in as a prisoner. That's what should have happened.
I think you're wrong about the date with the Geneva Convention, because...
Go on.
Do you remember... I remember during the Second World War, you've seen men in prisoner of war camps and in... Japan.
I'm Googling it, that's why I'm typing.
They said this is against the Geneva Convention, so it must have been earlier
that from
on.
Is that from Tenko? The Geneva... Here we go. I'm on Wikipedia, the home of the made-up fact, Doreen. So let's see if we can learn something. The Geneva Convention comprises four treaties. Okay. The singular... So the Geneva Convention denotes the agreements of 1949... negotiated in the aftermath of the Second World War. Oh, so there were three other conventions in 1864, 1906 and 1929. But the main one is from 1949.
Yeah, I know there was one before that.
Doreen, let me talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, Doreen, stay there one second, if you wouldn't mind, if we've still got Doreen, or if we let her go. Doreen, I think Shabs from King's Standing wants to have a word with you. Doreen, if you we'll get you back. Shabs, we're just getting Doreen back. Sorry, I pressed the button to cut her off. What would you like to say?
Sorry, I just turned the radio on and I was just listening about... So I don't know what the topics have all been about this morning. But about that woman, what's her name?
Doreen. Doreen's back now, aren't you, Doreen?
Yes.
Lovely. Okay, Doreen, listen to Shabs.
Doreen, when you was on about the twin towers, it wasn't just you that we felt bad and angry. I mean, there was other Muslims and Indians.
Yes.
And
that's... The immediate reaction, kill them and...
I understand what you're saying, but then when the producer on the radio says to you, well, I don't think they were Muslims, and you went, well, they're all the same, they're all terrorists.
He said it wasn't them that did that, it was somebody else. I said the both sides.
Shabs.
I didn't mean
Doreen,
all Muslims.
No, Doreen, Shabs, you did slightly mishear there. Doreen said that it was the Taliban flying the aeroplanes. I said it wasn't. It was probably someone connected with Al-Qaeda.
She said
they're both as bad as each other. They're all terrorists. She didn't say all Muslims were terrorists.
Okay, so I thought she said, when should Muslims are all terrorists?
No. I wouldn't have let that one go by, Shabs.
Okay, well, at the end of the day, in all wars, there's mistakes.
Yes.
But when you talk about 25,000 people being killed, that's not a mistake.
Now,
do you know what
well,
I mean?
When I see what the people in did to, the Japanese did to our soldiers
okay.
in
I'm
the
gonna,
war,
listen, I'm going to move on. Just,
you
Doreen,
want to kill them,
Doreen yeah. Shabs, thank you very much indeed. We're going off on a slight tangent there. Let's not dwell too much on Dresden and what the Japanese got up to. But Shabs, certainly, if Doreen had said all Muslims are terrorists, I would have stepped in there, Shabs. Don't you worry. She didn't say that in the slightest. But thank you for giving us a call. It's much appreciated. 08453 00956 81333 is the text. Start your text WM. Andy's in Hales, Owen. Morning, Andy.
Morning, Ian.
Andy, what would you like to say, mate?
It spurred me on, really, to ring when I heard that young soldier from Dudley talking, like, you know.
Yeah.
Regarding the killing of this this prisoner.
Mm.
I can't get it out of my head, Ian, when... I mean, you just said a minute ago, correct me if I'm wrong, that you thought that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda aren't the same, or...
I'm not totally sure what their connection is. Are you?
No, but then they're both the same, aren't they? They're more terrorists.
Right, but they're different organisations.
Yes, but they're still terrorists, aren't they?
Right, but they're
no,
not.
They're still terrorists. There's no way of looking at it.
Well, I'm not saying they're not. I'm not saying they're not terrorists.
They plant bombs.
Yeah.
They kill innocent people.
Right. I'm not saying they're not terrorists.
But they are terrorists.
I am not saying.
I can't get it out of my head.
Andy,
when
I am not saying that. Let me just. I am not saying that they are not terrorists.
Right. Well, we've got that sort of clear. I think them terrorists, and I think them ruthless, and I think them cowards. I think what they've done to our lads. In both wars, Iraq and what's going on as well in Afghanistan, they're cowards, they're more cowards, they're more scum. Now, coming back to this murder of this prisoner, I do agree with you, it was murder. He did kill him in cold blood, but I still get flashes in my head when the Iraqi war was going on and the Al-Qaeda had our lads parading them on television,
yeah.
On the knees, blindfolded, hands the back of the backs.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
We all saw that footage.
Am I right?
We saw that footage, yes.
Do you agree with that?
Do I agree with what? That happened?
Said,
do I agree that that happened?
What
yes, I
just done with our lads.
I agree that that happened.
Fighter pilots maybe would have been shut down.
What is your point, Andy?
Well, the point is, how can I put it?
I don't know.
To do that on television with our lads...
Shameful.
Pardon?
It was shameful.
It was absolute... Well, it's more than shameful.
You're not suggesting that we sink.
And I believe...
You're not suggesting
I've
that
only listened to the programme halfway through in,
right.
And basically when I heard that young soldier from Dudley ring up, I was very proud to hear what he was saying.
You're not suggesting we sink to the awful depths of the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda, are you?
But I did agree with a lot of things that young lad said. With what is going on in the war, what they are doing to our soldiers,
yes,
i.e.
In some ways what they're doing to our soldiers is kind of irrelevant in this case, isn't it? Because we are better and, you know, we are better than them and we should be following the rules and setting the international standard.
Right,
Marine A has not done that.
Yeah, we should have been more professional. But as I say, and I did agree with the previous caller, with the other two soldiers, apparently who was with him, why they didn't intervene. I mean, you know, that maybe that's something we'll never know.
Andy, did you hear the chap? We spoke to a chap, I think his name was Matthew, whose brother Phil was killed in Afghanistan 4 years ago, was blown up by a bomb. I asked Matthew if he forgave the people that killed his brother. He said yes. He says he bears them no malice whatsoever. How do you react to that?
Well,
isn't that amazing?
Well, it is amazing, isn't it? I can't find the words really to describe them.
It was one of those incredible calls I've heard on a phone-in show for a long time.
I don't think I could have done that.
No. It's interesting.
You know, in all honesty, I don't think I could have done that. He's either very foolish or he's a very courageous man.
Andy, thank you. I think it's the latter. He didn't sound foolish to me. He sounded like he had his head screwed on. We'll talk more about that after 11 o'clock, 08453 00956. Now, here's a story that will concern you. If, like me, you've got parents or grandparents or husbands and wives in a care home. My mum's in a care home. She's only 63. very ill with MS. She's in a care home. And we hear all of these stories, don't we? There are more and more coming out of just atrocious behaviour in care homes. I think the majority of them are fine, and I think a minority of them are excellent. But there are also a minority that aren't great. And this story, when I heard this story, it's absolutely shocking. The owners of a care home near Stourbridge have been fined £133,000 after a pensioner died after, get this, being left outside. Left outside. Hilda Fairweather, was in her 90s, had dementia, died of hypothermia after being left outside in 2009. She was found dead in the grounds of Appleview Haircombe in Iverley. The home admitted failing to ensure the health and safety of its residents and of not making a proper risk assessment. Well, her son, Roger Fairweather, joins me now. Roger, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
That's okay.
I just find this story so tragic. As someone who has a mum in a care home, how did you find out what had happened?
Do you mean initially?
Initially, yes.
Initially. My father phoned me. My wife and I were living in London at the time and said that my mum had died, but he didn't know what had happened. So, excuse me, I drove up to Kidderminster to see him, and it took several hours before we actually found out that she'd been left outside when the police and social workers arrived.
So, obviously, very, very shocking. Did the care home, when you went in, did the care home manager sit you down and say, this is what had happened, or did you have to wait?
No, we've never been to the care home.
Why have you not been to the care home?
Because my mother was placed there by Worcestershire Social Services.
Right.
Without consulting my father.
Okay.
And she was only there for a couple of weeks.
Oh.
You know, obviously, we would have gone to see her at some stage. But she simply wasn't there long enough.
And I would imagine that in her 90s, how severe was her dementia?
It was pretty severe.
Right.
She had spent most of the time confused.
Yeah.
She was very restless at nights. And, very difficult.
And so when you were told what had happened, how were you feeling? How did you react?
Well, we just couldn't believe it. If somebody tells you something like that, you sort of think they must be joking.
Mm.
How can that possibly happen? But we had to sort of wait 5 years, really, to find out the full facts, which we got yesterday in court.
And that those 5 years, I mean, they just must have been incredibly frustrating. And it's hard to mourn the death of someone, isn't it, when you're going through that? How tough have those 5 years been for you and your family?
The police spent 2.5 years investigating and then decided not to bring a prosecution, quite rightly in my view. And then it was passed to social services to deal with. And to be very fair to Stafford County Council, they've done a very good job. But it's been very, very frustrating.
So what do we know happened then? What blanks have been filled in?
Well, for a start, we now know that in terms of the care that was being provided there, one of the two people who were on night, not necessarily the night my mum died, were quite fond of having a sleep, looking after 29 people.
Mm.
And the history of people wandering from the house goes back quite a long time. And I think the barrister for the prosecution referred to about 18 separate incidents that had occurred there. But nothing had been done.
Did you say 18 incidents of people just kind of wandering out in a confused state?
That's what I understand, yes.
Wow.
In fact, I think somebody said in court that there had been times when they were ringing around the neighbours to see if anybody had been found.
And nothing could be done. Well, if it happens once, that's too many. But you put a door on that's got a code or a key or something that stops people getting out like that.
Now, they have to have fire exit doors, clearly. And those have to be able to be opened by whoever is there. What they were supposed to have on, and in fact it was in their publicity, was that the doors were alarmed.
Of course, yeah.
But they weren't. So somebody could open the door. There were no adequate outside lights. So the door was open, they closed it, and did nothing else. No head count check, nothing.
So people could get out whenever they wanted without setting off an alarm. Some of the carers like to have a little doze at night, and I've heard that story from other care homes before. Any other huge errors?
There were no systems for recording any real information. So, for example, if they did a head count, there was no record kept of them doing it, and therefore their head counts were missed. The night in question, it would have taken about 7 minutes to check. But they didn't bother. My mother didn't even have a name on the door.
It does surprise me. And when I was finding a place for my mum, we were really lucky we got the care home we wanted, because we saw some that you wouldn't leave your dog in it.
Yeah.
And it's that term, care home. It's in the title. And there are so few, there are so many incidents we're hearing where that care isn't being administered.
Yeah. I think that one of the real problems is that if you've got sufficient money, you can find a nice place for your parents to go. If you haven't, which my parents didn't, it's the local authority that takes the decision.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether they'd ever been there, but it's certainly not a place we would have chosen.
Roger,
we weren't given the choice.
Now that you've got all this information and everything's finished, do you think you can finally move on now from this?
Well, I think so, yes. And it's been a long time. The only bit left now is the inquest, which is effectively a formality. But yes, I think we can. And there's been a lot of publicity on this. That went out yesterday. Excuse me. People, I think, should read it.
Roger, I appreciate your time and sharing that painful story for us. Do give us a call if you've got a loved one in a care home. Like I say, my mum's in one. Hardest decision I ever had to make. And me and my sister had to make the decision, fell out with lots of my family. How dare you put your mother in a care home? Well, because it's the best place for someone in that situation. If you've got any stories, if you've got a loved one in the care home, do give me a call. 08453 009956. Good or bad stories. If you want to phone up and celebrate your care home and say, actually, the people there go above and beyond and they do a cracking job, then let's celebrate that as well. I don't want to get mired down in the last hour with negativity. But saying that, if you've got a story where things perhaps haven't gotten quite right, 08453 009956. Coming up in the next hour, Elvis versus the Beatles. It's an obvious one. It's the Beatles every time, isn't it?
BBC WM
95.6.
Teachers, if you don't like it, get out of it.
Pensioners who can't do anything to boost her income.
Abduction? As far as I'm aware, she actually went willingly.
Ian Lee, Saturdays.
9 till 12. BBC WM
95.6.
Sometimes you throw out a subject and you know it's going to run and run and run. And this subject is about Marine A, who has been found guilty of murdering an Afghanistan soldier on the battlefield. He's being sentenced to life. Do you have sympathy for him? It turns out lots of you do. We'll carry on talking about that. If you want to tell me your stories of relatives and friends in care homes, good and bad, do give us a call. And in this hour, Elvis and the Beatles are having a chart battle. Well, who's the best? I'm totally in the Beatles camp. Elvis, 5 good songs. The rest, he was an average lounge singer. What do you think? You can send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Text me, 81333, start your text WM, or, and loads of you have been doing this morning, thank you, give me a call, 08453 009956.
Call 08453 009956.
Ian Lee on BBC WM
95.6.
Hey, before I go any further, Keith Middleton's Rock Extravaganza, which I believe is tonight at 10 o'clock. Wowzers. I say wowzers, he's got Joe Brown on. Now, I interviewed Joe Brown a couple of weeks ago. He is one of the nicest people in rock. He was... Now, was he the best man at George Harrison's wedding, or was George Harrison the best man at his wedding? It was one of... I think George Harrison was the best man at his wedding. And he's got a brilliant new album out, which is him playing the ukulele. Mr. Blue Sky by ELO on the ukulele. It's a gem. So Joe Brown is going to be on with Keith from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock tonight. And also, if there's a rock track you haven't heard for a while, let Keith know. He will do his best to play it. Get him to play Mr. Blue Sky from the Joe Brown album. No, don't shake your head. Joe Brown playing it on a ukulele, it's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. BBC Shropshire, Stoke, Hereford and Worcester, Coventry and Warwickshire. And, of course, BBC WM. That'll be on from 10 o'clock tonight. It's a cracking song. Right. We'll talk about Elvis versus the Beatles in a bit. I would be very surprised. The few shows I've done here, sitting in for Nick, I've come to discover that you are all, you're all rather lovely. You're very cultured, intelligent, wonderful people full of taste. Yeah. So you will, of course, find it hard to appreciate Elvis Presley, because, let's be honest, Elvis Presley, he's rubbish. He's a chubby bloke that weren't that good. He didn't even have black hair. He dyed his hair. He was blonde. Elvis versus the Beatles, 08453 009956. More serious matters, the subject, though, of Marine A. Let's do, let me do a couple of these texts, and then we'll get to Stephen and we'll get to Nick. Ian, Barry and Tamworth, the only victors in war are the arms and weapons manufacturers. War are sometimes prolonged for the above. I feel sorry for the soldier and just as sorry for the unfortunate victim. We're talking, Chris is talking about Dresden. What a load of rubbish. Look who bombed Coventry, etc. What insult. Hitler was the war criminal. I'm not saying Hitler's a nasty guy. I'm just saying that Dresden, in terms of our history in World War II, which is pretty darn good, that was just a bit of a dark cloud over it, killing 25,000 civilians. Ian, why do you keep saying this soldier murdered? How many Taliban have been sentenced for murdering all our lads? If it's good enough to walk around free, it's good enough for our lads. I don't quite understand that. I keep saying murder because that's the legal definition of what he did. The judge has said it was murder. So that's why I'm using the correct legal term. And Paul says, Ian, it was murder. It was premeditated. He wanted to do it. Let's get some of your calls on this. Who's been there longest? Nick has. Nick in Coleshill. Morning, Nick.
Good morning, Ian.
Nick, what would you like to say on this?
I don't think it's a case of having leniency or having sympathy. I certainly think this Commando Shaw Marine A should receive a substantial prison sentence, but not life, because I do think there is one mitigating circumstance, and that is the totally irrational deployment of the political deployment in Afghanistan as anywhere else. You had a rather robust caller on earlier on called Alec, I think, wasn't it? He was talking about terrorists and scum and everything. Well, yes. Alec might like to address the fact that there were no Islamic terrorists and suicide bombers walking around everywhere before we started to invade countries after the Cold War, before America started going around bombing Iraq and everywhere else, simply because the Cold War was over and establishing its imperialist interests. And you see, the trouble is, when soldiers are faced with irrational... When somebody joins the armed forces, like I did a long time ago, but it's all out of me now, you waive your right to question your orders. Whereas in the industrial workplace, anyway, you do have a degree of flexibility, whether you're unionised or not, to actually question your employers. But they waive their rights in the armed forces to question what their orders and everything. You go in there comradely, you do a lot of training, a lot of physical teamwork, and you don't question what you're doing. And this, I think, is all very well, but it has a detrimental effect. It collides with natural human instinct not to question things.
But that's part of being in the military, isn't it? Is you are trained not to question and to follow orders. Because if you start questioning, you want me to go over there? Too late, you've been shot. You've got to do things instantly that you're told to and trust your seniors, haven't you?
Yes, and well, that is it. But that, I think, and I'm not saying it's an excuse, but that in some soldiers, when they can't understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, they will perhaps, in some isolated circumstances, resort to this kind of behaviour. And to that event, for that reason alone, I think there is some degree of mitigation for this soldier, and I don't think he should receive a life sentence for that.
Nick,
I think they're culpable. The real people who are really culpable is the government.
Well, yeah, it's not the government that pulled that trigger, is it? It's Marine A.
But it's the government that sent them on these... ridiculous foreign policy missions that have got nothing to do with freedom and democracy.
No, but once we're there, whether you agree with the reasons for us being there or not, once we're there, you have to abide by the rules of the war. You can't blame Tony Blair or David Cameron for Marine A shooting that fella.
Well, I blame the system, you see.
I blame the system,
whereby, you see, you had a chap earlier on, I think it was about your third or fourth quarter, going, oh, we've been out there, we've been shot at and everything. Well, fair enough, that's his job. So it's a mitigation for this soldier doing what... But the fact is, soldiers should be able to question, I believe, to a degree, what their foreign policy is, what the foreign policy is.
No, Nick, I was about to wind you up then, and you've come out with something as ridiculous as that. Of course soldiers are not allowed, they're not allowed to express themselves politically, they're not allowed to align themselves with organisations, and therefore they are not allowed to question their orders. They have to follow their orders.
Well, it's very selective, isn't it, what a soldier can say these days on the media and what they can't. A soldier can come on and say, oh, I think it's great that we're going out there and we're doing this for our country and everything. But if anybody wants to question, if a soldier wants to come and question the politics of why they're there, they're called marshals.
I don't want my soldiers questioning the politics. Whether I agree with Iraq and Afghanistan or anything is beside the point. I do not want the soldiers questioning it. I want the soldiers to do as they are told. And that is what the training is for, and that's part of the job. And if you're not happy with that, if people sign up and then go, hang on a second, I'm not allowed to ask questions of the boss, well then get out.
I think this is a whole problem with the system, not just in this country, but all over, how governments can just simply rely on soldiers to be robotic and unquestioning.
That's why
the MPs send them into war.
I would imagine that soldiers have to be robotic and unquestioning because they have to do some pretty awful things. They have to go and do horrible, horrible, awful, awful things. And if they weren't robotic and if they were questioning, they wouldn't be able to do them.
Well, if we had a political system which actually debated why we're at war, probably the real reasons, which are all economic, it's nothing to do with freedom and democracy, then these kind of situations might not happen. I'm not saying it's...
You served, I don't know in what context, could you ever have done anything like Marine?
I don't know, I never went into the kind of theatre of operations like Afghanistan and Iraq. I was Northern Ireland mainly, which was a completely different type of
Still casualties, fatalities...
Whether I wasn't in that situation, so I don't know. It's hypothetical.
Nick, just going off on a slight tangent, Call of Duty, video games like that, what do you think? Do you think they demean the impact of war?
Yes, I do, but there again, you see, I'm not against technology or innovation, but you see, you had another caller on who was making some very good points about the fact that we're all throughout the world the same. We are. We're automatically... born into a world where we think we're under some national flag in some country, and that means that we're all against each other, economically reasoned. And these games are synonymous, really, with that kind of culture, that kind of mindset for war and things. So whether you're against it or not, it's going to go on, and all these games firms make massive profits out of it.
They make huge profits. It's bigger than Hollywood. Nick, thank you very much for that. He wants soldiers to be able to question their orders. Oh, well, two things spring to mind. The first one is, it doesn't sound to me like a great idea. But then, what did Nazi soldiers say in the Second World War when they committed hideous crimes? We were just following orders. Has he got a point? Should soldiers have more of a say as to what they get up to? 08453 009956. Right, coming up after the travel... I need you to call in on this. Elvis versus the Beatles. Both are releasing albums for Christmas. Who's going to win? Who's the best? Oh, I can't be impartial on this. It's the Beatles, hands down, every time. Virtually every song they did was a winner. Elvis, I could think of five good songs. 08453 009956. Elvis Presley, incredibly overrated, isn't he? Lots of texts to catch up. Let me do one text about the soldier. This one's quite threatening. It's anonymous as well. Spooky. Listen, you. I've never had a text that starts like that. Listen, you. You have never been on a battlefield, so therefore know nothing of the mental pressures you're under. So before running the Marine down, think on. It starts with listen, you. It ends with think on. 08453 009956. Ian Lee sitting in for Nick Conrad here until midday, and then it's early kickoff with Daz, if that screen in front of me is correct, which it isn't always, so I could be wrong, but we'll see. Now, the Beatles and Elvis Presley, two of the most successful pop music acts of all time, could be fighting it out for the number one spot next week in the UK album charts. The Beatles on Air, live at the BBC Volume 2, 63 tracks. It's released on Monday. It goes up against a new Elvis best of album, The Nation's Favourite Elvis Songs. I cannot sit on the fence. I cannot be impartial. My BBC training does not work when it comes to something like this. Elvis is overrated. He's a load of old tosh. 5 good songs, none of the 50s stuff, it sounds awful, too much reverb. The Beatles were majestic. They did masterpieces. Yeah, obla-di-obla-da. All right, that takes a few points off them. But apart from that, yes, Maxwell Silver Hammer. Okay, but apart... Yes, Yellow Submarine. But apart from those three, most of their songs are excellent. 08453 009956. What I'd love, can we get an Elvis fan and a Beatles fan? If we get them on, I want to hear them go head to head. But before we do that, let's speak to John Robb, who runs the music website Louder Than War. Morning, John.
Morning.
Elvis is hideously overrated, isn't he?
I don't think so. I think you're taking an extreme position there. But obviously, musically, I would say the Beatles are far more consistent. And the thing about Elvis is, I always think this: has anybody actually ever listened to an Elvis Presley album? You know, like, because he obviously made albums, but I never met anybody listen to one. But he's got classic singles that define the times. I think for charisma, stage performance, and singing, Elvis is still the king. But for actually songs, they're just like little vehicles for his voice, really, weren't
they? You're right, and he was a cracking singer. I don't think he had the best material. And you're right, no one says, hey, have you got this great Elvis album? It's always an Elvis greatest hits, where pretty much nearly all of the Beatles albums were solid records, in every song, virtually every song, being a potential hit.
I think the thing about Elvis, it was when he became the king, it was like a much more naive time. He was very badly managed. People didn't realise the power of rock and roll, did they? They didn't realise it was a long-term thing. Because the Beatles learned from his mistakes in the way, didn't they?
Yeah.
Without Elvis, though, you wouldn't have the Beatles. That's what you always have to remember. Elvis invented rock and roll and modern pop culture. Not deliberately, by mistake, in a sense.
How did the thing I don't understand is how Elvis managed to become the legend he did. He had about 18 months, two good years, and then he went a bit silly. Then he joined the army. The 60s were awful for Elvis until 68, the comeback special. But and he managed to claw back his credibility for a while, and then he kind of lost it again in the 70s, I suppose.
The other way of looking at that is that despite every single wrong decision, every single rubbish film he made, every single, like, sort of patchy album he made, he was such a great singer and has such great charisma, he actually overrode all the bad bits, which kind of makes him, in a weird way, better than Hussein.
Yeah, I totally get your point. Which for you is the best Elvis song? I know it's a tough one to throw at you.
Heartbreak Hotel, I think it's an amazing record. And it had such an impact, and if you read, you know, people like John Lennon, so when that record came out, it changed everything.
Try and set the scene for that, job, because to some it might sound a little twee, a little dated, but when it came out, was it 56? It did change pop and rock, didn't it?
Yeah, there's kind of rock and roll records before Elvis, but when you hear Elvis, it's in a different sphere, you know, just basically on the vocal performance, because it sounds so powerful, it sounds so sexual, it's like the world waking up after the Second World War, isn't it? It's a completely different type of pop star. He reinvented the whole game, but whether he did it deliberately or not is a different question. I think it was just a natural charisma bubbling out all the time. But the Beatles, though, the thing they brought in was the idea of writing songs. You could write your own stuff, you could control your own career more.
And the Beatles have had that brilliant kind of post-band management, haven't they? You know, the Rolling Stones are still going, but they're still nowhere near as big as the Beatles. The Beatles are seen... Well, they're kind of seen as legendary, aren't they?
The Stones will be as well. It's only because when you're still going, people don't look back on you. I think the thing about the Beatles is they knew when to stop, because it was starting to fall apart at the end, very badly.
Yeah.
I mean, you say they didn't have many bad records, but Let It Be is not a fantastic record. The songs are okay, but because George Martin wasn't running it. I mean, that's the thing about the Beatles. They always had really good people around them, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, good. I mean, Brian Epstein's fairly naive, but he was still meant well, whereas the Colonel was terrible for Elvis. Yeah. He made all the mistakes possible because he didn't have a clue what he was doing. But I think the tragedy of this debate is why we still talk about Elvis and the Beatles for the Christmas number one.
Mm.
You know, this is, it's you know, this the nostalgia trap, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I am a huge Beatles fan. I will be getting the Beatles on air, and it is a nostalgia trap. But I guess now that music has changed away from vinyl, away from CDs, and it's not a physical thing anymore, I guess we will be stuck in that trap forever, won't we? Because nobody will be as big as the Beatles or Elvis.
No, but again, it's different times. Because I always think this was less competition then. So when the Beatles came along, they were competing with Elvis. But now if you're 18-year-old kids in a band, you're competing with Led Zeppelin, Beatles, Elvis, Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
The whole raft of stuff, hundreds of bands that have not been going for 30 years, plus a contemporary, so it's far harder to make the cultural impact. You can't make the same cultural impact twice either. You can't reinvent rock and roll music. When Elvis came, it was part of the times, you know, the new technology of the times, people listened to the radio, etc. The mass communications were coming in. He arrived at that point in time and did it and was brilliant. And the Beatles arrived in the next kind of surge of technology, but now we're in a different kind of period where everything, pop culture is far more fractured. So it's been impossible to make that kind of impact.
Favourite Beatles album, John?
White Album.
Really?
I really love Hard Day's Night as well, because it's just a great rock and roll record.
Yeah.
That's what John Lennon was on fire with Hard Day's Night. The thing about White Album was, it's so eclectic and there's so many different types of music on it.
Number nine. Yeah. Have you ever been able to... Do you listen to that all the way through when it pops up on your CD player?
Actually, quite a few times, but I was in a different state of mind when I listened to it.
John, I understand exactly what you're saying. We'll go no further. John, Rob, number nine. 08453 00 9956. That's John Rob from Louder Than War. Over to you, dear listener. What do you think? Elvis versus the Beatles. It's a classic battle of the titans for the Christmas number one. Chris is in Walsall. Morning, Chris.
How do you do, Ian? I think John's covered a lot, actually.
He was good, wasn't he? He knows his stuff.
What I was going to say, but if you look at it, we are still talking about Elvis and the Beatles.
Yeah.
What you need to look at it as well is that you've got Elvis as a kind of like Mousy's figure. He's interpreting somebody else's songs.
Yes.
He's the voice, and like, he's an interpreter, and I mean, like, to kind of like write him off, I think like a lot of it comes from the parody of like the white suit era and like the Elvis impersonator era.
Yeah.
But like that is a kind of like comedic bubble that Elvis has got himself trapped into, or people have got this envisage of like Elvis the last few years.
Yeah.
If I could recommend a couple of books to you.
Go on, yeah, definitely. I always have for a rock book.
Last Train to Memphis and Careless Love. Both by a chap called Peter Guralnik.
Yeah.
I'd recommend reading those because it's from more or less day one. And you know how it ends.
He dies on the toilet.
But it's a fantastic book. It's Elvis that has to be done in two volumes. And like it's warts and all, but it actually covers the kind of like how Colonel Tom Parker kind of like created the kind of like seeds of like the music biz that we know.
Yeah.
Of like managers. I mean, like when Elvis went into the army, Colonel Tom Parker got Elvis to record so much stuff in advance that like records could be sold while he was still serving time.
Yeah, well, no, exactly. Sorry, I mean, the reason I'm sounding slightly distracted because I'm looking up those books on the internet. So I'm probably going to order them. I do like. Oh, look, there's one copy of it used for one pence. I'll have that. Thank you very much indeed, Chris. Listen, we'll move on. Thank you very much indeed. You do make a good point that Elvis did become a bit of a joke because of the weight issues, the jumpsuits, those kind of things. I don't think, I said I could come up with five good Elvis songs. I've got three so far. In the Ghetto.
In the Ghetto.
Suspicious Minds. Oh, that's a good one. Just Can't Help Believing. Oh, American Trilogy. That's a great one. That's four. What would be the fifth good Elvis song? 08453 00 9956. Polly's in Lichfield. Morning, Polly.
You're trying to wind people up, aren't you?
Beg your pardon. Why do you say that?
Because you're saying the Beatles are better than Elvis.
Yes.
You must be joking. Mm. The first song I heard was Heartbreak Hotel, and I was smitten by him.
Right.
Did you see him on the telly last night?
I think he's dead, love.
Oh, the programme about him.
Okay.
All those intelligent musicians talking about him. He was absolutely fantastic, and there'll never be another Elvis.
But the Beatles were better, weren't they?
Get zossed. And Paul McCartney, that last concert he did,
was
embarrassing.
Oh, he's in his...
singing now.
He's in his 70s, though.
I don't care. I've never liked the Beatles. I've never taken to them.
Right.
But Elvis...
Hang on a
second. First song. I was smitten.
Let's stay there on the line, Polly. I want you to hear Terry from Perry Bar. Morning, Terry.
Good morning.
Polly absolutely loves Elvis Presley. What would you say to her?
Well, I can't stand the man. His whole career was based on bigotry and racism. Every time he comes on the radio, I turn it off. There were a lot of coloured musicians in his era when he was younger, singing on street corners and that. And because of the racism of the radio station, they refused to play that music.
But that's not Elvis's fault, is it? That he kind of took black music and went, you know, softened it down a bit and went mainstream with it.
Yeah, but it wasn't his type of music. It was a rip-off of theirs, was it? Nothing he did was original.
Oh.
He didn't invent rock and roll.
Polly, Elvis wasn't original.
Oh,
he was a musical magpie.
You don't know what you're talking about. Elvis could sing anything. He could sing the ballads, and he'd got that deep, rich voice that, really took to it. And when he sings Heartbreak Hotel, I could cry.
Let's have a little listen. Good timing there, Polly. Let's have a little listen, and let's see if we can make Polly cry. Away you go.
Well, since my baby left, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lone Street, that Heartbreak Hotel where I'll be. I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just so lonely. I could die.
Is that making you cry, Polly?
That takes me back to my young days.
Really?
And his eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got the sexiest eyes going.
He's a good-looking fella.
But then
so was John Lennon. No.
Oh,
George was cute. George.
He's just making a joke now.
No!
You can't tell me that was a natural singing voice.
Of course it was. What do you think it was?
He's putting it on. Anybody can do that. Singing at the beginning, he's screaming.
If you you do it then. You what? Sing like Elvis.
Oh, no, thank you.
Because you couldn't do it.
The saddest individuals in the world are Elvis impersonators. Then it really need to get a life.
No, Elvis is the king.
Well.
Terry, Polly, thank you very much indeed. Terry may have a point about Elvis impersonators. It's a strange thing. I've seen an Elvis impersonator. It's a strange thing, isn't it? I've also seen Beatles tribute bands as well. But why would you, you know, style your life around Elvis? 08453 009956. Scott has tweeted me, the Beatles easily. I'm not even a big Beatles fan. All Elvis did was hold back far better black artists. Terry's in Coastley. Morning, Terry.
Morning.
Are you agreeing with me on this?
I blooming damned agree.
Sorry?
I've never heard such a load of tripe in my life.
Thank you, buddy. What are you talking about?
And I'm talking tripe. You know, I mean, Elvis Presley was... He was the king. He really was. The Beatles were just a rowdy group. I mean, when I used to go round dance halls, I've heard plenty of groups as good as the Beatles. Plenty. Local bands. I don't know why they ever got to the top. But Elvis Presley, he's in a world of his own. There's no one to touch him. You know, he's like Muhammad Ali or John Wayne in Cowboys. There's nobody to touch them. Every so often a superstar comes along. You can't crash the beat. I couldn't even mention a song that the Beatles ever made. But I'll tell you this, Hound Dog.
Oh. Yeah, I'm listening to you. He's gone. Terry, I was listening. I was listening to you spout...
Hello?
Yeah. Terry, what on earth is going on there?
It just went off, my phone did.
No, you put the phone down.
I put the phone down because he'd have gone dead.
No, I was listening to you talk nonsense.
Absolutely. Right,
exactly. Yes, exactly what you were saying.
Says the Beatles are better than Elvis Presley. Good grief, there's only
Terry,
one talking rubbish right
Terry,
here, and it ain't me.
Terry, join me. We're Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts
Absolutely
Club Band.
Rubbish.
We hope you will enjoy the show.
I'm not being offensive. I'd like a British group, but we got a stacked
help.
British group, but not the Beatles.
Help, help, help,
help.
It's been a hard day's night. Come on, Terry, sing it. And I've been working like a dog.
Suspicious mind, hound dog. Them on the kind of sing songs that you remember for all your life. Yeah. The Beatles and rubbish. I mean, they really are. I know they're Brits and I would like to say they're good, but they're rubbish.
It's gone again.
Who's that? No, it's not gone, Terry. I'm waiting. It's how a conversation works.
I'm sorry.
Who's that in the background?
Yeah, that's my wife.
What's her name?
Anne.
Let me speak to Anne. Let me speak to Anne. I don't want to speak to you anymore. Speak to Anne.
I'm just trying to tell Terry about Elvis. I'm a keen Elvis fan. I always have been. I sat up last night and watched him on the telly.
Yes.
I don't think there's anyone to beat Elvis.
But Anne. No, tell Terry to shut up. I'm not talking to him now. I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Anne, let's be honest. The only reason you like Elvis is because he's got nice eyes and a cute bum. That's it, isn't it?
No.
That's it.
No. Excuse me. Who am I speaking to anyway? What's your name, Danny?
My name's Ian.
Ian. Right, Ian. It wasn't because of his eyes and a nice bum. I liked his music. And he sang from the heart. And a lot of songs we play sometimes bring tears to my eyes. Like that other lady said. Yes, I think he was and he is the greatest.
Sing, Anne, sing with me.
Sing.
Day tripper, yeah.
Now.
She was a day. please me, whoa, yeah.
Yeah, people's time. I can see him in the background.
Listen, you're both wrong. Go and buy yourself the best of the Beatles and go and listen to it and educate yourself into good music.
The only one I liked of the Beatles was John Lennon when he sang Imagine.
Oh, that was good, wasn't it?
That's the only one I liked. But I didn't buy it, but that was the only one I liked.
Nobody buy a Right, go on, off it, you two. I can't have you hijack. Nobody buy a Beatles song. That's my attempt at a Brummie accent. I won't do that again. 08453-00956 is the telephone number. On the subject... Oh, look, this is how we do a quantum leap in topics, and this is why I like doing things like this, because you jump from... Kasim, if you wait just a second, because I don't want to appear insensitive by jumping between two things. So what we'll do is we'll get Kev on first, and we will squeeze you in before the end of the show, Kasim. Thank you. And Marjorie. Marjorie's in Northfield. Yes, Marjorie.
That's right. Now it's gone. Oh. Elvis Presley.
Yes, it's back.
No one will ever beat him. Absolutely out of this world is the one and only. He's great. His singing was marvellous. And my favourite one was... One Night With You.
Go on, give us a bit.
I can't sing.
Come, neither could he.
I couldn't sing when I was young, and I'm 81 now, but no chance.
He couldn't sing when he was alive. So
he was a lovely singer. Oh, no, he can't sing while he's dead.
No, he didn't sing much these days. But he had quite a nice voice. But
he had a lovely voice.
He didn't write his own songs.
I don't care if he didn't write his own songs. What he sung was beautiful.
But Paul McCartney's voice. Oh, Paul McCartney.
He can't sing. None of the Beatles could sing. They're absolute rubbish. And I certainly wouldn't have paid to go and see them.
Their harmonies.
They had about three hits. The music.
They had about 20 hits.
That was good you could get up and jive to.
Yeah.
Sing to. Listen to.
I am the walrus.
Pardon?
You are the walrus.
No.
They are the Eggman.
I love Elvis Presley's. Brilliant. Okay. Absolutely brilliant. And you've been running him down blind.
Marjorie.
And you've got the Beatles thinking how lovely they are.
Marjorie, stay there. Marjorie, say hello to Kev.
To who?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. The Beatles. It's always been the Beatles. Yeah, go wake up on a Saturday morning with a bit of that. None of this jailhouse rock nonsense.
Oh, jailhouse rock was very good as well. I liked all his songs. He never did a bad one.
Well, I don't know. Neither did this one.
He didn't do a bad one. Everyone was lovely. I watched the programme last night on the television where I was disappointed because they never played one song through. And I really was waiting for that.
Just as well, really, isn't it? The Beatles, didn't get up in the morning.
The Beatles are
rubbish.
Goes
for the day, darling.
I didn't like any of them.
Kev, thank you
for your Beatles knowledge. Marjorie, you say Elvis never did a bad song. Didn't he do a song called Old Shep about a dog dying?
And that was good as well.
Oh, no, it was... Now, come on.
There's so many different songs. And as that lady before me said, he sings from the heart, and that's exactly what he did.
Marjorie, thank you very much. Susan Harborne. Good morning, Sue.
Bye. Morning, Ian. How are you?
Yeah, I'm confused. I'm really confused. When I hear people like Marjorie. Doesn't she sound like such a normal, sensible woman until she starts spouting off that nonsense?
Yeah, and the other guy that was on as well.
Well, go on, Sue. What do you want to say?
I'm a Beatles fan.
Yeah.
I've also been an Elvis Presley fan when I was younger.
But you're better now.
Yeah, I'm feeling better, much better.
Yeah.
Did Elvis ever write any of his own material? I don't think he
what,
did.
What Elvis had to do, because he couldn't write his own songs, but he wanted a part of the publishing money, is his manager, the Colonel, would say, yeah, Elvis will record this song Hound Dog, but he's got to have a writing credit on it. So he would get his name put on there. So he was stealing from songwriters.
Yeah, well, that's definitely Colonel Parker, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, he led... Elvis up the wrong path, I think.
Yes. I think Elvis's career could have been so much
demise,
more successful.
To Elvis's demise, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So good programme.
I'm getting away with it. I think I'm just about getting away with it. Just. Mm. Sue, thank you very much indeed. Cliff's in Tipton. Cassim, I will come to you in a second. Let me do Cliff, then I'll speak to Cassim. Cliff.
Good morning, Ian.
Good morning to you. Yes.
Right, Elvis. No, thank you very much. Yowling and screaming and shouting, no. The only thing I can say about Elvis is that when I was a kid in West Bromwich, somebody gave me a 10-inch 78.
Oh.
And I wish I'd have kept it.
Oh, that'd be worth a few quid.
Yes. Now, when the Beatles' year record, She Loves You, came out in, I think, 1963, my mother said to me and my dad, go and take Cliff up here to West Bromwich and get me a copy of that record. So up we went to a little record shop, West Bromwich High Street, up by the town hall. We went downstairs and the other chap said, can I help you, sir? And my dad said, yes. I want a record called She Loves Me. And the other chap said, don't you mean She Loves You? And my dad said, that's what I just said. Will you listen? She loves me. He said, no. And I was trying to interrupt. I was saying, Dad, don't make a fool of yourself. We got it eventually and we took it home and we played it.
That's
and
wonderful.
As regards Elvis or the Beatles, the Beatles are influential. Even symphony orchestras have done... done versions of music, but Elvis, no thank you.
Cliff, thank you very much. It sounded like an Abbott and Costello sketch then. Have you got a record called She Loves Me? She Loves You? Yeah, that's what I just said. Wonderful. Thank you for that, Cliff. Right, we've been talking... coming up, the show finishes at 12 o'clock. It's early kickoff with Daz. We are tying up a few bits and pieces at the moment, so we can take more of your calls on Beatles versus Elvis. If you missed the start of the show, we were talking about this story that's in the front page of the Times about this Marine A, who has been found guilty of murder. Retired Royal Marines commander appealed for leniency in the sentencing of this commander who's been found guilty of murdering a wounded Taliban fighter in Afghanistan. I've been asking, do you think we should be lenient with Marine A? And also asking about Call of Duty games and computer games. Do you think they demean war? Kasim's in London. Kasim, thanks for waiting. I know you've been on for quite a while. What would you like to say about this?
So first of all, good morning, whatever's left of it. But yeah, pleasure to join you guys. I guess for me, you know, it's interesting to hear the calls. I've been listening to most of it. And, you know, some calls I've heard have saddened me, but then I've heard one or two calls that really lifted the spirit, if you like.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing, actually. We have a balanced, if you like, discussion in that sense. But I just wanted to make two points, really, around the Marines. One was, I don't really care what people say around the circumstances. You can always find circumstances to make an excuse for pretty much anything you want in life. Therefore, you have to apply principles. And the fundamental principle for me is that life cannot be cheap, no matter what the circumstance. So this notion that just because you're in war, all of a sudden the standards have to drop, I think I find abhorrent. And the fact that, you know, whatever goes on in war, well, it makes it okay, it's excusable. Actually, no, it doesn't make it excusable. You don't, just because you put on a uniform doesn't excuse murder. Whatever you want to call it, what the Marine did, I'm sorry, there's only one way of describing it. It's murder. Simple, pure. Let's not try and patronise people by saying circumstantial.
No, but what about the people, Kasim, who this morning have been saying, but yeah, this guy had lost about 12 of his friends in battle. If rumours are to be believed, the enemy were waving various parts of his friends at him. I don't know, you know, describe any more detail than that. This man has suffered. Does that make it any different?
No, it doesn't make it any different to me. Because we have a very simple principle. I think you have to live life as much as possible with principles. And then you talk about circumstances. The principle for me is very clear here, which is you cannot take the law into your own hands, period. I mean, I'm sorry, we can't compromise these principles. And then you can talk about circumstances till the cows come home. the point is very, very simple for me. Just because you put on a uniform doesn't give you the right to take somebody's life if it's not in for a particular purpose. I mean, who is to say that, you know, this person can do X just because of circumstance? Tomorrow, if somebody comes around and does something to me, does that give me the right to go and do something else because it's circumstantial? So we can't do that. We don't allow it in civilian life. We can't allow it in army life. It just shouldn't happen. What I find really interesting is that, you know, you get people coming, so you haven't been out there, you know, I'm a Marine, I've been out there, and when you have, you know, bullets flying around and people dying and whatever, well, don't go to the army there.
Kasim, thank you very much indeed. Thank you for making your point. 08453 009956. He's got a point, hasn't he? If you don't like the bullets flying around, if you don't like your friends passing away, you know, getting shot, and I'm trying my best not to sound flippant, and I know that it does, so I'm trying, but then don't join the army, because that's what happens. 08453 009956. Back to the Beatles. Connor's in Erdington. Morning, Connor.
Hello there, Ian.
Beatles or Elvis?
Beatles all the way.
Tell me why.
Well, Elvis, it is just a load of rubbish, really, I think, because there's only the one good song that, is, that he made, and that's Return to Sender.
Return to... you like that one. Connor, can I ask, how old are you?
I'm 15.
15. 15 years old. You should be out there listening to, I don't know, what's hot these days? Lady Gaga, the Backstreet Boys. You should be listening to those kind of bands. Why are you listening to old music?
Well, I don't really like those. Well, there's a type of band. It's all rap and stuff, isn't it?
So what kind of tunes are you spinning at home these days?
Oh, mainly 70s and 80s stuff, but I will listen to the 60s as well.
Favourite band? And I want an answer. I'm not going to let you wiggle out of this one, Connor. I can hold...
The Bee Gees.
The what?
The Bee Gees.
Good one, man. But seriously, what's your favourite band?
That is the favourite band.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, like, which Bee Gees? Which Bee Gees? The 60s Bee Gees or the 70s Bee Gees with all the disco stuff?
70s.
Wow. Well, good for you. Well done. I'm sorry for laughing. Good for you. And favourite album of all time?
I don't have one. I haven't got any albums. Okay. Well, I've got a few.
Connor, listen, thank you very much indeed. My new favourite album is Bangers by Miley Cyrus. Can you believe she's called an album Bangers? We get the point, Miley. We know what you're trying to do. Well done, Connor. He's 15. Favourite band of the Bee Gees? 08453 009956 is the telephone number. I'm so sorry. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's 11:45, BBC WM. Morning, this is Ian Lee, BBC WM 95.6. Here until 12 o'clock. I'm sitting in for Nick, who's off poorly. Get well soon, Nick. 15 minutes. If you want to give me a call, Elvis, Beatles, War. I know, when you do it like that, Elvis, Beatles, War, you can't help but sound Partridge in the quantum leaps of topics, but that's what we've been covering this morning, and you've got 15 minutes if you want to give me a call. 08459 455555. Well, it is Remembrance Sunday tomorrow, so apt that we have been talking about Call of Duty and what's been going on in Afghanistan, but are we in danger of forgetting the importance and the horrors of the First and Second World Wars? Are kids taught enough about them in schools? And with the recent release of the new Call of Duty game, do we now glamorise war rather than fear it? Well, earlier on, just before the show, I spoke to Second World War veteran Peter Ward, who joined the Royal Navy at 19 and recently received an Arctic Star Medal for his missions. I began by asking him what he thought of computer games like Call of Duty.
I don't like it.
Why not?
I don't think war should be glamorised. It's a very serious matter, and I don't think it teaches whoever uses these games the full seriousness of war.
Games in the playground have always been based on kind of violent endeavours, cowboys and Indians, war games, people running around with sticks and shooting each other. Is it any different from
that? I don't know. I don't think that's a good analogy at all.
Tell me why.
I don't know.
No, that's okay.
It's just my first reaction.
Yeah.
Would be that these two are quite different.
But But you, as someone who has served and someone who has seen action, and I'm sure lost friends, you find the idea of young people playing war games on their computers, you find it distasteful?
Well, quite honestly, when I immediately discarded it, I really can't comment because I haven't seen it.
Right, okay.
I haven't used it. I don't know what it involves. Mm.
Also, there's another subject in the newspapers today that maybe you can help us with, Peter. This soldier who has been found guilty of carrying out an execution whilst serving in Afghanistan. He's going to get a life sentence. We don't know the term yet. There are pleas from senior members in the military to give him a more lenient sentence, as war is... it's a crazy place.
Mm.
What are your thoughts on that, Peter?
I think I would go along with that. It's one of those it's a question that is unanswerable.
Mm.
But I think that the people that have served in Afghanistan had a horrific time. And I think minds can be disturbed and people have moments of madness. No, I certainly wouldn't lock that chap up for a year. I don't think that would be fair at all.
Even though...
not for a year, when I say that, yeah, for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Even though he is a serving British soldier. And
I know, I've heard all the arguments.
An example around the world.
Yeah.
And he murdered someone.
Yeah, it's easy enough for people to pontificate about these things. But, He has served this country, and I think that in a very, very difficult situation, I think that needs to be taken into account.
Well, Peter, as someone who served, you can give us...
People have aberrations, and there's no answer to that.
And finally, Peter, do you think that young people know enough, are educated enough about the wars? It's Remembrance Sunday tomorrow. Will it mean anything to lots of young people?
A lot of young people do not know. In fact, I was at a concert in Bromsgrove yesterday, and the deputy head of a school in Studley, they're going to invite me to go and talk to their 10 and 11-year-olds shortly. And I think I ought to have done more of that. I mean, a lot of people, there was a survey done recently, two teenagers knew nothing about D-Day or VJ Day, knew nothing about the war at all, didn't know it existed, which I think is absolutely scandalous. Now, I think there are certain things in the history syllabus that are a must, because we wouldn't be living as we are now if we hadn't succeeded in both the world wars.
And where will you be tomorrow, Peter?
I shall go to communion at St. Godwell's Church in Bromsgrove at 9 o'clock. There is a service in the afternoon at 3, and I've been asked to read out the names of the fallen, both the First and Second World Wars. And I shall be watching the cenotaph.
Well, that was Second World War veteran Peter Ward, who joined the Royal Navy at 19, speaking to me just before the show. Look at the time. It's nearly midday, everybody. Hands up, who's taking their mum to see a matinee of Dreamboats and Petticoats this afternoon? Just me. Okay, well, that's going to be... it'll be fun for the first 10 minutes, I'm sure. 08-453-00956. You've got about 6-7 minutes if you want to squeeze in a call. Daz will be coming on at midday and doing sport and things like that. Let me do some of these texts. I've got so many texts. Let's read some of these. You want our soldiers to show compassion to a terrorist? These are our soldiers and have 100% backing from me and the majority of this country. We're not in this situation, shouldn't criticise these soldiers, says Dave. Soldiers are trained to kill, but you never kill the wounded. It was murder. They broke the laws and the Geneva Convention and should accept the consequences. All over the world, soldiers break the laws. He's been made an example of. It shows we have fair laws. People need to take emotion out, says Dan. As far as the soldiers see it, he is an enemy. My husband was a soldier. He said, if it's your brother, kill him. He is an enemy. From Millie, I don't quite know. I think there may be some words missing from that, Millie, which may have confused me ever so slightly. Let me just do one more. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the Taliban are not legal signed-up combatants. Soldiers in the true sense, they are terrorists. This means they are not covered by the Geneva Convention. Not only that, the Taliban blow our boys up. And yes, I have served. Yes, let him off, says Tim. I'll maybe do a few more of those before the end of the show. Now, rescue workers in the Philippines are trying to reach areas cut off by one of the most powerful typhoons on record. Winds of up to 200 miles an hour, I think some of them were even higher than 200 miles an hour, battered the country yesterday, destroying buildings and causing flash floods. At least 100 people are known to have died in one province alone. Well, Rachel Fitzpatrick from Walsall hadn't heard from her 23-year-old brother, Jonathan, who is an electrical engineer working in Leyte Island. She joins me on the line now. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
Have you heard from your brother now?
We have.
Oh, fantastic. There we go. I wasn't sure which way this was going to go. So when did you last hear from him, and then how long was the gap?
We last heard from him at midnight, the night the hurricane hit, so midnight our time, so it would have been about 8 a.m. his time.
And that was Friday night, wasn't it?
Was it Friday or Thursday?
No, it's Thursday night.
Yeah. Sorry.
And was he worried about the what was going to happen?
Yeah. They were scared. They were putting on a brave face, but they were scared.
And where exactly was he? What kind of accommodation was he in?
He's in a hotel.
Right.
And it's just on the coast, but it's on the side opposite to where the hurricane came in initially.
Okay. So you couldn't hear from him. Did you? What, were the phone lines down? Or
yeah, all phone lines were down. So we've just been sat waiting, and we've only just got a text back from him.
When did he text you?
He texted about half an hour ago.
Oh, isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He just said, it's John, just to let you know I'm safe and I'm unhurt.
Brilliant.
No power, no water, but we've got food for a week.
Oh, dearie me. That must have been such a relief when that came through. How are you feeling?
Yeah, we're relieved. We're just desperate to hear more from him now, but they're all sharing the one mobile phone, so,
okay,
yeah.
Right, yes. I suppose it would be. So do you know what conditions are like out there?
No, he's not said.
And when something like this is happening, who can you talk to? Do you hear from the company that sent him out there? Does the government speak to you? Do you have anybody supporting you?
No, well, nobody's really known anything.
Right.
So we've just been all waiting to hear, so we've contacted the Home Office, so they know. So then anybody who phones the Home Office know that area, people are okay. So just doing everything that we can, really.
You're going to have a little celebration tonight?
Oh, probably, yeah.
Yes, well, good for you. Rachel, that's brilliant news. Thank you very much for that. Yes, well, I knew Rachel was coming on, and I didn't quite know where that story was going to go. Well, she got a text from her brother 30 minutes ago. Brilliant. You see? Good, nice to end on a bit of good news, isn't it? Going back to the subject of Marine A, who's been found guilty of murder. Mick's in Hell's Owen. Morning, Mick.
Morning, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Mick, what would you like to say?
Well, I just think it's deplorable. You can't have two sets of rules, one on one side and one on the other. It's like having a football match, one team playing under one set of rules and one set of rules playing.
But surely it's better to be on the side that's playing on the fair, decent set of rules, and we don't descend to the cheating side.
No, there's no set of rules when you're at war.
Well, there are.
There isn't. No,
well,
there isn't.
Well, there are.
I'm sorry, there isn't.
Mick, you're wrong.
No, I'm not wrong. My grandfather fought in the 1418 war, right? He was in the trenches.
No.
Right? They were shooting, and there was an old cliche of his. Have to shoot. You have to kill people. If not, be killed.
Right.
And that was my parents, my mom, and her uncle, a brother and sister, didn't hear of him for 4.5 years when he was over there. So, what do you think they think about now? There's no the Taliban. You can't.
No,
you
but
can't.
But Mick, your premise is flawed. And what happened to your grandfather is it sounds awful. But there are rules in war. It's called the Geneva Convention.
Yes, but you've got to have two sides that play to the Geneva Convention.
So if one side doesn't, we sink to their dirty, cowardly level, do we?
Yeah,
we murder prisoners.
You go and tell that person that's lost the son this week with a landmine, and see what the answer.
Well, we spoke to a gentleman whose brother died 4 years ago today. He forgives the people that killed him.
Yeah, well, probably one person does, but one cap doesn't. What you have to do is to look at it at the broader picture.
Okay, Mick, I'm going to end you there just because I want to squeeze Paul in before the show ends at midday. Paul in West Brom, you're the last call on this show. What would you like to say?
Oh, it's Ian. Talking about the video games. Now, I think the video games are the future now. We're going to see a lot more of these video games, and they're going to get worse and worse and worse. But let's talk about drones. Now, these drones, okay, actually, like a video game. We've got people sitting in rooms in front of a TV monitor actually guiding,
yes,
these drones. And I believe these people are situated in different countries. And it's almost like a video game.
Paul, I'm sorry to cut you short. I hope you feel you got your point in, but we have to cut it there. Because otherwise Daz will get furious. Daz, I've only just met the gentleman. I like to know him as the biscuit thief. Otherwise he'll get very, very angry. And we wouldn't want that, would we? Listen, thank you so much for letting me fill in for Nick. Fingers crossed he'll be back next week. And appreciate all of your calls this morning. Some fantastic and amazing stories. That's it. That's your lot. Do stay tuned. Daz is coming up soon. But from me, ta-ta.